Chair.
Yes. Mr. Rentz.
See, once I turn one switch, maybe it'll blow up at home. I think it's time that we finally say good evening to ACB Radio World.
Hey! Listeners, welcome to the second general session of the California Council of the Blind. And now we are going to turn over the mic to Rob Turner, who is the chair of the Credentials Committee. Rob, do you have a microphone?
Or I do.
Okay, it's yours.
Okay, thank you. This is the Credentials Committee report. This is where we make sure that each chapter is represented with their credentials, the number of members, the number of votes. The way it works is for statewide affiliates, they have 5 votes regardless of the number of members, so that doesn't apply. But chapters, for up to 25 members, they have 5 votes. And for each additional 5 members, or if they reach a majority of 5, so for example, if you have 28, then you'd have 6 votes, and so forth. So as long as you've got the majority, we round up. So here are the list of the chapters. They're the president, the number of votes, the number of members, the delegate, and the alternate delegate. So we start off with the ACB Capital Chapter, President Paul Patchy, 11 votes, 53 members, delegate Joni Patchy, alternate delegate Warren Cushman. Active Blind Inland Valleys Chapter, President Christy Crespin, 5 votes, 17 members, delegate Nellie Emerson, alternate delegate is Nancy Unger. Alameda County Chapter.
Are they supposed to answer folks?
No. Not much is a problem.
No. Okay, thanks. I didn't think so. Peter Crockwell, president.
Okay. Did you already tell him?
5 votes, 17 members. Delegate Katrina McCurdy. Alternate delegate Peter Crockwell, although I don't believe he's here. He is here. Good. Association for Multicultural Concerns. Votes 5. Members 56, delegate Lillian Scafie, alternate delegate Don Brown. Bayview Chapter, President Steve Fort, 10 votes, 51 members, delegate Steve Fort, alternate Connie Skeen. Blind Students of California, President Randy Morgan, 5 votes, 11 members, but they're a statewide affiliate anyway. Delegate Lena Bandy, alternate Randy Morgan. Braille Revival League of California, President Marlene O'Neill. Again, it's a statewide affiliate, 5 votes, 42 members, however. The delegate, Marlene O'Neill, no alternate. Butte County Council of the Blind, President Al Beigler, 5 votes, 10 members. Delegate Don Roberts, alternate Peggy Roberts. California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, CCLV, Okay, Bernice, President Bernice Kandarian. 5 votes, 79 members.
Whoa, that's
a... Delegate, Donna Sanchez. Alternate Delegate, Bernice Kandarian. California Library Users of America, President Jerry Arakawa.
Yes.
It's a statewide affiliate. 5 votes, 27 members. Delegate, Jerry Arakawa. Alternate, Leslie Tom. Central Coast Low Vision Council Chapter, President Michelle Mason.
More.
5 votes, 15 members. Delegate, Robert Campbell. Alternate Delegate, Marcy Knudsen. Compton Chapter, President Michael Williams. 11 votes, 55 members. Delegate Michael Williams. Alternate Jeffrey Sims. East Los Angeles Chapter, President Louis Herrera. 8 votes, 39 members. Delegate Ramona Craig. Alternate Carlos Amaral. El Dorado County Chapter is not attending. Glendale Burbank Chapter, President Artis Bazin. 7 votes, 35 members. Delegate Artis Bazin. Alternate Debbie Berry. Golden Gate Chapter, President Dr. Martin Jones. 5 votes, 23 members. They're listed as the delegate, as Martin Jones, but I believe Martin isn't here. So I think in that case, Marvelena will be the delegate.
Yeah.
So, and I don't have any alternate listed for them. So next we move on to the Greater Bakersfield Council of the Blind. President Penny Valdovinos. 5 votes, 16 members. Delegate Penny Valdovinos. Alternate John Ross. Greater Long Beach Chapter, President Robert Wendt. 5 votes, 17 members. Delegate Robert Wendt. Alternate Aisha Wendt. Greater Los Angeles Chapter, President Pamela Metz. 5 votes, 24 members. Delegate Richard Harmon. Alternate Delegate Ken Metz. Greater San Joaquin Valley Chapter, President Mary Beth Randall. Tom Randall, pardon me. Let's get the name, get the first name right here. Oh boy. So 5 votes, 17 members. Olivia Presley is the delegate, and Mary Beth Randall is the alt. Guide Dog Users of California, President Ann Kaiser. It's a statewide affiliate. 5 votes, 56 members. Delegate Ann Kaiser. Alternate Pat Wolf. High Desert Chapter, President Leah Gesendener. I probably butchered the name. 8 votes, 39 members. Delegate Brad Hogarty. Alternate Ezekiel Brooks. And the Humboldt Chapter isn't here. So, Inland Empire Chapter, President Foster Brown. 7 votes, 35 members. Delegate Bessie Dunn. Alternate Foster Brown. Orange County Chapter, President Catherine Schmidt Whitaker, 5 votes, 17 members. Delegate Joel Isaac. Alternate Delegate Andrea Pitzenbarger. Orientation Center for the Blind Alumni Association, President Albert Contreras. It's a statewide affiliate, 5 votes, 24 members. The delegate is Bill Berry, no alternate listed. Is Gina Hanlon in the room? Okay. Were you able to get the roster printed? Has not come back. Oh, it was she was doing it?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, Redwood Empire Chapter. The president, Sean Ryan. They've got 9 votes, 44 members. Delegate, Diana Deutsch. No alternate. San Bernardino Chapter. President, Theodore Wilbrecht. 9 votes, 47 members. Delegate, Jean Brannan. Alternate, Deborah Gossett. San Diego Braille Club, President Jacqueline Jackson. 6 votes, 30 members. Delegate, Jacqueline Jackson. Alternate, Joseph Lopez. San Diego Chapter, President Lorraine Foster. 6 votes, 31 members. Delegate, Glenda Castle. Alternate, Patty Davis. San Francisco Chapter, President Linda Porrell. 7 votes, 33 members. Delegate, Linda Porrell. Alternate, David Jackson. San Gabriel Valley Chapter, President Donna Pomerantz. 10 votes, 48 members. Delegate, Pam Pology. Alternate Delegate, Vincent Calderon. San Mateo County Chapter, President Phil Kuttner. 10 votes, 50 members. Delegate, Jeannie Ackerman. No alternate listed. Silicon Valley Council of the Blind, President Mike Keithley. 16 votes, 78 members. Delegate, Roger Peterson. Alternate, Mike Keithley. Yosemite Gateway Chapter, President Margaret Buckman Garcia. 6 votes, 28 members. Delegate, Margaret Garcia Buckman. Alternate, John Gaspar. Chapters not seated would be the Antelope Valley Chapter, El Dorado County, Humboldt, Pyramid, and the Solano Adult Blind Club. Okay. Did Hazel get back into the room with yet?
No.
She did not. Okay. Well, unfortunately, this was, I think, something I was hoping to be able to get their roster in time to have them seated, because I know they've worked hard and they do have a lot of members. Gaspar? Okay, I'll fix that. So the correction on the Yosemite Gateway roster is it's Gaspar, not Gaspar. And I will fix that. So my apologies. Yeah. So let me just, okay. So, okay, yes, let's call for any corrections now.
So what are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
Thank you. On the Redwood Empire, the alternate is Beryl Brown.
Oh, okay. The alternate's Beryl Brown? Let me fix that. I didn't... Yeah, unfortunately, you guys didn't send a representative to the Credentials Committee, so... All right, so let me... I guess we better... Sean Ryan, poor... That's really... Yeah, I know. I did hear that earlier. I was just being mean. Okay.
Rob?
Yes, please.
How do we deal with the... what do we do about the group that you need the roster for?
You know, I sincerely believe that there was a miscommunication. I can explain what happened. Last spring, it slipped by me that they had not updated their roster. I believe that they had paid their dues and had submitted an old roster. Or maybe the roster was not received. I know that, but I know when it came time for this fall convention, I was told by the office that there was not a current roster for the Randolph Shepherd group. And I know that in speaking with Hazel Harmon, I know she was working very hard to get it printed out. And I also know that in talking with the group, that they had done a lot of recruiting and had really made a major effort to gain membership. So... it's a special interest affiliate, and so the number of members wouldn't affect their votes. So, I mean, you know, clearly from a constitutional and from a procedural point of view, the chapter, you know, wouldn't be seated. But I think, you know, in my case, under these particular circumstances, I feel that it was a communications error on both my part and on their part. So, for me, I favor giving them a chance to be seated. But
okay. I hear a first and I hear a second of accepting the group.
Which group is it?
This would be the Randolph Shepherd Vendors.
Discussion.
Top and bottom.
Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nays? Abstentions?
Aye.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. And that is the only group right now which was dealt with, right?
Yes, everything else, unless there are any other corrections, that would be the conclusion of my report.
I have a question, Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
When someone is late with their credentials, customarily, we do not seat them because the Constitution, we try to stay with it because if you start breaking rules for one thing, you do for all. My question is, when someone is late, what do we have in place to notify them to that they are overdue or late or need to get it in? What do we do when they're late?
I'm going to, if I can, respond to this, Kathy. One of the things that I've decided as I've gained more experience in this position, I have decided that next spring I am going to call personally every chapter president, and I am going to inform that chapter president of the rules, and I'm going to say very clearly that if the office has not received the paperwork by the proper time, that other than a change of delegate name or alternate delegate name for, you know, emergency reasons or reasons that, you know, just can't be helped, that we will not plan on seating the chapter. I think it's, for me, this has been a very stressful experience, and I've tended to try to lean maybe a little over backward to try to help the chapters be seated, but I think...
Mr. Chairman, am I correct that in seating you're supposed to receive in the office by March 1st the roster and the dues? Am I correct in that?
There is for one convention, the items are due 30 days before, and I think for the other it's 45. Roger, do you remember which? I think it's 45 days for the spring and 30 for the fall.
Yeah, but if you know, the fall, the thing for the fall is updates.
Right.
I wouldn't think that anyone would not be seated for not giving you any updates. So I have to believe that somebody who's not being seated now didn't have a credential, a proper roster in last spring.
Well, that's right. And that's exactly what's happened in this case.
You know, it's really hard to understand how that problem could still be going on now.
I think because of an error in communication, I think they had they believed that they had mailed in the paperwork and so forth, and somehow it just
Mr.
I don't know.
Chair,
I can't go anywhere.
Yes,
with
I'm sorry.
On behalf of the office, every chapter, and this applies to RSPC, is notified more than once that when they don't have paperwork that's in.
And I do want to say very clearly that I really rely, the office is, I know they also work very hard. I talk with Ed, I talk with Lily, and I know they communicate, you know, several times with these chapters, and this is why I do believe that as the chair, that starting next spring, I will have to contact each one personally as well, because I think we're going to have to be firm. Now, if we had been firm last spring, you'd have had a convention with a half of the chapters seated. I don't think any of us wants to experience something like that. I mean, it just would make our organization, it would just be a bad thing.
Mr. Chairman, I agree with that, but on the other hand, neither do want to become an organization that we have things here that we do. We have a constitution. We have to abide by things. It's not fair to let one group do something and not another. And
right.
So I think we're going to have to either make up our minds to abide by our constitution, forget it. I, for one, will not forget it. And if ever again someone comes with no, you know, and not casting any nasturtiums at anybody this happened to now, but I can tell you that ever again, if you ever ask a question, or any other chairman does, of whether or not we will vote for someone who has not come in with their proper documentation, I, for one, will be prepared to not vote for it, and I think most of us will not.
Yeah, and the only other thing I can say in response to this is that in my years with CCB, in the past, chapters have frequently, or not, you know, it's happened very frequently where exceptions have always been made. So we can, you know, it's, I accept, and I think we do need to become much firmer than we have been. And as the chair, that's going to be my point of view.
Just wait.
But I also remember very many instances where the credentials chair, you know, sought to abide by the Constitution, and was voted that was not accepted. The convention overruled basically and allowed the chapter to be seated. So that's kind of why I've taken a little bit of this stance.
There were times too, though, when they were not seated. And
frequently when they were.
And when you go to the American Council, I tell you what, you lose your votes.
Yeah, well, I think
okay.
It's... Like I said, I'm in favor of a firmer policy.
And the group, the people in the audience have voted in favor of recognizing, seating this group right now. And I,
Mr. President, may I address this issue?
We're not going to discuss it any further.
I move that we adopt the credentials report.
Is there a second? Any discussion on the full report being adopted? Okay. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Nays? Abstentions? Okay. Thank you very much,
okay,
Rob.
Okay, Gene, can I just real quick?
Go ahead, Rob.
I just want to thank the Steve Fort, who was on the committee. Coletta Davis, unfortunately, couldn't be here for health reasons. Mike Keithley, always instrumental in helping me get the Braille embossed. The office for their very hard work in communicating with me and the chapters. And that's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Rob. Jeff has asked, he'd like to state something about procedural thing, about our program tomorrow afternoon. And Jeff?
Okay, this should only take a second, but we're scheduled to have a discussion tomorrow afternoon on the one versus two conventions, and we're scheduled to have the vote on that occur on Sunday. The Constitutional Bylaws Committee has asked me to ask the body, and I want to do it tonight because we don't want to spring this on you tomorrow, whether the body would prefer to have the vote as well tomorrow, or the vote, or the vote on Sunday morning. You know, we're starting at 8:30. That's one of the reasons we decided to start early, was so that we'd have sufficient time to do that. I know there are people that think it ought to be tomorrow, but I think that we should at least have a little bit of discussion. If there's people that don't want tomorrow, they ought to have the right to say that, because we customarily do not engage in business meetings themselves tomorrow. But if it's the body's will,
I'm okay.
You know, then that's what we'll do. So. Are there discussion on this? I hear a lot of people want tomorrow.
Yes, off to my right.
Okay, Lena Bandy of Los Angeles. I think personally that business should be conducted when business is scheduled to be conducted, and that would mean on Sunday, because I just don't. Tomorrow is supposed to be discussion, and I think that, well, I know that there are some of us, including me, who would like time to process what was discussed and not just jump into the middle of a motion without time to process.
All right. Thank you.
Well, let me take one the other way, then.
Rick Platt from Burbank, California.
Okay. Are you for tomorrow, Rick?
I'm for tomorrow. Correct.
Okay. Go ahead.
Okay. I believe, and this is, I've thought it through, and I'm pretty sure that there are an awful lot of people who have thought it through, because this has been an issue that has hit the floor many times over the past years, if not decades. Now, here's the main reason why I believe tomorrow is a much better idea. I believe a decision as important as this really deserves to be addressed at a time when the membership, at least most of the membership at the convention, can attend. There's an awful lot of people that leave on Sunday for various reasons. Who knows why? But the bottom line is, I think it should have been scheduled as an exception to the rule insofar as the business concerned, and it should have been done at a time at the time when most of the membership could actually participate in the decision-making process. I really believe that is important and imperative that the membership have a say in it. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Do we have another one for Sunday?
Mr. President,
one more.
Could I make a comment?
Are you,
Yes.
I really think, you know, whatever we decide here, it's regrettable that we have to do something because people won't stay for the business meeting. The most important thing about this organization is a business meeting, and I really, you know, I've never left without attending a business meeting. And if we have delegates and we have presidents and they come here, the business is very important. If we can't have people stay over till Sunday, maybe we better start having business on Saturday.
Okay, so that was neither a tomorrow nor a Sunday, I guess. Do we have a Sunday? I don't want to belabor this too much, but...
Hi, this is Connie Gill, and Kathy kind of stole my thunder because we come from Seattle, Washington. We're still members here, but our flight doesn't leave till 5 in the evening on Sunday.
On Sunday.
Okay, well, just for balance, you should have one more Saturday. And that'll be the last one.
All right, Andy. I think that's sufficient. We'll vote.
Well, this will be very short. I agree largely with Rick, but I think that, you know, there are a lot of people. This is the kind of situation where it may take longer to travel than it ordinarily does because a lot of people don't fly like they might usually do, and you have train schedules, and it takes several hours. And, you know, there are people who have to work on Monday, and they may have to leave tomorrow morning. I think a decision as momentous as this, which is probably one of the most important things that we've discussed in all the time I've belonged, I think should be held at a point where you have the maximum possible attendance.
All right.
That's it.
Yeah, I would only caution, and I'm not really advocating for either one. I can see both sides. My only concern about Saturday is whether we will have sufficient time to get that roll call done. That is the only concern that I would have. Okay, let us vote. All those for Saturday,
aye.
Say aye. Aye. All those for Sunday,
aye.
Oh, Lord.
I think we have to do a roll call.
Oh, Lord. I hate to do this. This is not the way we wanted to start the day. Jerry, your committee is in trouble. Okay. We need to have ballots. You guys got extra ballots, I hope. We're going to do it the right way.
Mr. President, that wasn't a motion, was it?
Yes, it was a motion. Yes, it was. No. It was in the form, Kathy, of that. There's no other way to handle it.
You know what? I would have voted for a presidential decision.
It was so close, I don't know that I could call it.
No, I mean before it started.
Yeah, but we don't do secret ballots on issues, only on...
Yeah, okay, that would be an easier way. We don't need to do a secret ballot on this. Good point. So, we can do...
Please, everyone.
We can do a standing, raise hands vote. You can get the ballots back. Good point, Roger. Our parliamentarian straightened this out.
Who do I give this resolution to?
Roger, another point of order.
You got a resolution, bring it up to me.
As the parliamentarian. We're doing a hands vote. Do we have to do the delegates or not?
Okay.
Roger, we do not.
If you don't want it, I was under the impression this was basically a straw poll, in which case I would think that you could do a straw poll just as a...
Okay, Roger, that's your view.
If it's a formal vote, it has to have both.
If it's your view that this is a straw poll, then we can do it just with the hands. That's fine. That would certainly save a lot of time. Okay, all those in favor of Saturday, raise your hand. We'll take the majority rules here.
Saturday.
Saturday.
While the vote's being taken, Mr. President, I would just one of the San Diego chapters gave me a resolution to give to our chairperson. It appears to be in print. In addition to the print, do we happen to have another format, electronic or braille? Because I'm not too certain whether we have somebody who will be able to read this.
Oh, hey, hands down. Hands up for Sunday.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Leave the same arm up, no matter how tired it gets. If it's going to fall off, that's tough. You're a hardcore voter.
I got news for those who do not like late meetings.
The resolution is being dealt with. Ed is working on it right now to put in an accessible format for us.
Seventy-four for Saturday, 38 for Sunday. It's a pretty clear majority. So we'll do it on Saturday and try to get it done. Well, it'll make Sunday go quick.
Mr. Chairman, point of information.
Catherine,
yes.
Was this published tithes to be done on Sunday in the agenda?
Yes and no. It was publicized that there would be a constitutional and bylaws report on Sunday. So it didn't specifically say that that vote would be taken on Sunday. So you can characterize that either way, Kathy. I can only state that.
Okay. We're just going to deviate from the schedule just a few minutes, 5 minutes. Carla Gilbright, who's an attorney at the Disability Rights Advocates, Inc., would like to just say a few words to us for about 5 minutes about some work she's doing in DRA. So please give her your attention and give her a hand.
Thanks, everybody. So, as you just heard, my name is Carla Gilbride, and I'm with Disability Rights Advocates, which is up in Berkeley. And we are a nonprofit law firm that does litigation and negotiation on issues of disability discrimination. And we work on a wide range of issues, some of which we thought might be of interest to people here, and we're also I'm specifically here to get input from people about other issues you'd like to see us working on beyond the ones that I'm about to list. But these are the things that we are currently working on or that we're kind of looking into in the initial stages of investigating, where we're interested in hearing people's experiences. For one thing, we're looking into the accessibility of websites. So if there are any websites that you've had problems with using a screen reader or screen magnification, any assistive software that's not accessible to you, we'd be interested in hearing about those. Another issue we're working on is point of sale devices, specifically at post offices throughout California, either the ones at the counter where you're, you know, interacting with a human being and doing a transaction, or there are also self-service kiosks at the post offices where you can buy stamps or calculate your shipping for a package, and if you've had problems using those because of an inaccessible interface, we're interested in hearing about that. We're also working on issues of emergency preparedness plans in different cities and counties throughout the state. So, for example, whether the city has a system for notifying people about oncoming fire or other type of emergency, plans for evacuation, transportation, and shelters that are accessible. So if you have any concerns in those areas or have run into a problem in a past disaster or disaster exercise that your town or city's done, we'd be interested in hearing about that. Also, access to health care information, whether that's bills, health records, test results, prescription information, anything regarding your health care, getting those in accessible formats. And insurance, generally, if you've had a problem with getting either being denied life insurance, getting premiums that are higher than other people are getting and being told that that's because of your blindness, that sort of discrimination is something that we're looking into. And let's see, just a couple more. Access to parks, specifically national parks, just any sort of problems with accessing trails, signage in the parks. And finally, sidewalk issues. Sounds like there are a lot on that one. So, yeah, you know, actually lack of a sidewalk, barriers in the sidewalks, you have an idea what I'm talking about there. So if you have had problems or things you'd like to share on any of those topics, or if there are other topics besides these that you think we should be looking into that need to be investigated or where there's some blatant discrimination going on, please let me know. If people have a way of taking notes or just very good memories, I'll give you my email address right now and you can email me. My email address is K... Okay. I'm waiting. One, two. Actually, instead of just waiting in silence, I'll also say that I'm going to be here throughout the day tomorrow, so I'll try to hang around by the registration table so that people can find me there. And if I'm not there, I'll leave a way for people to get in touch with me so that you can, you know, follow up with me. If you don't have a way to get my email address now, which I'm about to tell you, it's K Gilbride, that's K G I L B like boy, R I D like dog, E at dralegal.org. That's K Gilbride at dralegal.org. And I'll also be around by the registration table tomorrow. Thanks very much for your time, guys.
Thank you very much, Gilbride. Okay. Like it was said earlier that our discussion vote tomorrow on the 1-2 conventions is going to be a very historical aspect of our history. We're going to set some history in our group one way or another. But what we're needing to do is know something of our past history. And our history committee has come this evening to us to bring us approximately an hour's worth of history of the California Council of the Blind. So I'd like to turn over the mic to the chair, Catherine Skivers of the history committee, who will tell us, give us...
Here we go, about 5 minutes from, left.
Well, Catherine Skivers, please.
Thank you. Is it turned over to me now?
Yes, it is yours.
Okay, thank you. The history committee members are Roger Peterson, Chris Gray, Bernice Kandarian, Joe Smith, Don Queen, Al Gill, Gussie Morgan, and myself. This evening, we're going to have a panel, and I must begin by apologizing to my committee. I have fussed and fumed because I said there's no way you can put 75 years of history into an hour, and then my president tells me this evening that we could have had all the time we wanted. So I'm sorry, committee. Better late than never, though. We're going to do the best we can to hit some of the highlights. We'll be putting other things in the BC for you to read on the history. And we're going to get right into this now, and different panel members are going to give you different aspects of what happened. I left myself to last for two reasons. If we were going to run out of time, we'll run out of my time. Besides that, we all might get lucky. I'm starting to lose my voice. I want to begin by introducing Al Gill, who comes all the way from Washington, someone that knew Dr. Perry. Al's going to tell us some of what he knows about Dr. Perry.
I'm here to talk about Dr. Newell Perry, his life, and his many contributions which he made and which this organization has made to make better lives for blind people in the past 75 years. Newell Perry was born in Dixon, California, December the 24th. And I want to just interject a little very personal note here. It seems to me that that was a very, very wonderful Christmas present which was given to the blind of this state and nation by the up above. And
What year?
In December the 24th in 1873, and died in 1961 at the age of 88. His father died in 1883, leaving him an orphan. 2 years earlier, Newell had become blind as a result of a terrible case of poison oak. He was in a coma for a month and came out of it blind. A year later, he went to the California School for the Blind, and I am told that he walked from his home all the way to the school. In 1890, he graduated from the California School for the Blind, and he was the first blind person to graduate from Berkeley High School. Warren Wilkinson was the principal at the California School for the Blind from 1865 to 1909. He became an important person in Newell Perry's life. He was a father, friend, teacher, guide, and supporter. He helped Newell into high school and college over the strong opposition, because he knew what the blind needed and believed that Newell could flourish with a good education. Newell lived at the School for the Blind from 1892 to 1896. He attended the University of California in Berkeley, where he graduated. He studied in Europe at the in Zurich, Switzerland, and received his Doctor of Philosophy in Mathematics. And I am told that he completed his thesis in German. In 1899, he received a teaching fellowship at the University of California in the field of mathematics. And in 1909, became an instructor at the same university. Through all the time, he kept in close touch with Warren Wilkinson and referred to him as Dear Governor. In 1904, he was tutoring in math at the University of Columbia. He had a bleak decade looking for a teaching job. He sent out 500 letters and applications trying to find work. Many of the responses showed that people were surprised that he could teach. In 1907, while in New York, almost single-handedly, he convinced the legislature of New York to pass the first law providing for readers for Bryan College students. In 1912, he returned to California and was appointed head teacher at the California School for the Blind. From 1922 to 1947, he was director of advanced studies at the school. During this time, he inspired countless men and women to look to education to go into business and into the professions. Ever since he was a child, he had been interested in employment for blind people. He talked about hanging around older boys when he went in school in the hope he would get some ideas about what he might be able to do when he grew up. But sadly, they had the same questions and didn't have any suggestions. I want to add at this point about hanging around with the older boys. When I was going to the School for the Blind, and it was in the middle 40s, I was in the fifth or sixth grade, Dr. Perry was the director of advanced studies, and I would go down the steps at outside the school building, and every evening Dr. Perry would come out for a smoke, and he would talk to anybody that wanted to talk to him. And Dr. Perry would not be able to talk to anybody without teaching them to think. And that's one of the highlights of my education at the School for the Blind. In 1934, Dr. Perry founded the CCB and was president for 19 years until 1953. In 1940, he led CCB and California to be one of the seven states to form the National Federation of the Blind. That organization was begun in a meeting held in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. In 1948, Dr. received the Shotwell Award, an annual award given by the American Association of Workers for the Blind in recognition of one who has distinguished himself working for the blind. In 1959, he helped organize and became the honorary president of the organization, which later became the Associated Blind of California. He created the Lily Perry Fund in memory of his beloved wife, who had died 30 years before. It was his intention to have this foundation assist college graduates to find employment and to become established in their chosen professions. We believe that every blind or visually impaired person has benefited in some way from programs started by Dr. Perry and the CCB. As Perry Sundquist said after Doctor's death, only the meaning he has given their lives can tell the real story of Dr. Perry and his contribution to society. And I have a little side note that in the middle 1950s, about 55, I was going to the University of California. I was married and I had a family, and so to supplement my aid to the blind, I would sell blind made products in the afternoons. One afternoon, I knocked on the door on Woolsey Street in Berkeley, And who should answer but Dr. Newell Perry? He invited me in, and he just talked as if we had just been talking all our lives. And he imparted much of his philosophy and teaching even then. He told me, he said, you know, every blind person should go door to door selling so that they'll know what it is for people to say no. I know he would love to see how this organization has progressed and what we have accomplished in our 75 years. But I also know he would ask, what are you going to do from now on? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Al. Roger Peterson is a tremendous asset to this committee. All of our committee members are great, and I'm trying to make sure that I hope I didn't leave any of my members out. But anyway, Roger is a treasure to have, and he's going to share some things with you right now.
Well, I didn't know Dr. Perry, but I certainly knew some of his boys. I have been interested in the history of this organization. I have to say that I've recently joined the board of an independent living center, and they keep talking about disability rights and about the history of disability rights. And at one point, they told me that Ed Roberts was the first significantly disabled person to graduate from the University of California. And I said, well, you must not believe blindness is a significant disability, because Newell Perry did that like 60 years before. And I take delight in bursting their balloons when they talk about these things. Tell them, I said, you know, they talk about, well, exempt earnings and all these concepts. I said, yeah, we invented that. And so, and of course, you know, CCB, it really started before CCB, because as Al pointed out, Newell Perry really started organizing much earlier than that. He started organizing. What he did was, as I understand it, what he first started was a group called the Alumni of Self-Supporting Blind of the California School for the Blind, and he went all around the state organizing chapters of this alumni group. And those organizations, many of them became chapters of the California Council of the Blind later on. And when you hear an organization that's called a Braille Club, or when you hear of an organization that's called a Club of the Adult Blind, you know that those are the old organizations that Dr. Perry organized. So when it came time to form the California Council for the Blind, and that's what it was called at first, Kathy can tell you about how it got changed to California Council of the Blind. This was really interesting when I discovered this. As it was mentioned, as we've heard several times this weekend, Kathleen Michael of the state you know, the Department for the Blind, the Division for the Blind of the State Department of Social Welfare, thought she would organize a sort of coalition organization, sort of like BARC, I guess, or like the Blind Advisory Committee or something. She was going to have an organization that would have a lot of sighted people and have some blind people, and they'd all get together and agree what should be done for those blind people. And apparently, Dr. Perry and Dr. Tenbrook kind of changed the plan. They got people credentialed to this meeting from all these groups that Dr. Perry had organized around the state, and so they ended up in October of 34 with 16 blind people and 13 sighted people, and they knew how to count votes, you know. And so the character of the organization was changed, as the lady from the Historical Society said, in that very day, the character of this organization was changed, and it became a consumer organization, and eventually took on the name California Council of the Blind. And all of, you know, Dr. Perry, Dr. Tenbrook, Dolly Glass, all these blind folks took leadership positions. I think Kathleen Michael got vice president or something, but they pulled off a coup. And but one of the, it's always been legislation and improvement of programs has always been a goal of the organized blind and of the California Council. And one of the things I heard that I thought was interesting was that in 1928, I believe it was, there had to be a referendum with petitions getting signed and so forth in order to make it legal for the state to pay money to any individual. So they had to do that before they could get the legislature to start aid for the blind. Because it wasn't legal. The California Constitution didn't allow. I think it was a constitutional amendment initiative. California Constitution didn't allow money to be paid to individual citizens. And I don't remember any time since I've been in this organization that we ever had an initiative. I think that's pretty impressive. Then there was another one in 1949, and Kathy participated in this one. It's where there was a bad law passed by the legislature, apparently, and all the programs for the blind and for the aged and so forth were sort of taken over by a particular agency and a particular person, very paternalistically, and they had to get that law removed, and they collected, what was it, 200, I have it here somewhere, but
284,000
signatures. Now that's a job, guys. You know, you want to talk about some political action, there it is. And that was, you know, those were the big the big dramatic parts. But and I have to tell you about the apparently there were ads against this campaign, and one of them had a pitiful looking blind guy on a poster saying, who's going to wash my face? So you know, even back then they had that kind of commercials. Paternalistic commercials. But throughout the years, there have been just all kinds of programs, all kinds of things that we made happen. It sometimes was administrative, and Kathy's point is well taken, that 7 years after the original 1934 meeting, one of our guys, Perry Sundquist, was in the job that Kathleen Michael had at that time, as directing the programs for the blind in the Department of Social Welfare. And he was there for a long time, like 20 years. And he was, you know, he was the administrative guy. He was the guy that implemented all these programs that got passed by the legislature. Then you had the legislature passing the programs, and you had bills being written by guys that are in our Hall of Fame, Raymond Henderson and Leslie Schlingheide, and we had our own legislator, which I think is a pretty good deal. From 1928 to 1952, Ernest Crowley was a member of the state assembly. And we didn't have to find somebody to carry our bills. We had him right there, one of our members. And so, and then sometimes it had to be, there had to be litigation too. And we did litigation in those days. We got people, blind people put on, allowed to serve on juries. We got blind people allowed to teach. And one of the things that I still see the ugly head of reared every once in a while is this business of, I remember the Junior Blind of America just had some job announcements recently. They said it requires a driver's license. And you know, driver's license, to me, unless you can show that you really need the driver's license, that's code word for blind people need not apply. And so they got the driver's license requirement taken away for a teacher's credential. And they got blind people accepted into civil service. Russ Kletzing was a pioneer in that area. He was an attorney who worked for years for the Water Resources Board in California. And the Kletzing case was, when I first started reading the blind literature in the 60s, I think the Kletzing case was a big one. Of course, you know that Kathy was one of the people that did a lot of this stuff. She was the Frank Welty of the time. And I don't know if Frank's here. Hope he is. But I have some advice for him. Kathy told me a story I got to tell on her about she had this really nice dress, and she had received compliments on it from several members of the state legislature. And they said they really liked it when she wore that. She said, "Well, I like to wear it a lot. I really like it. I think it looks good on me. And whenever I come to the Social Welfare Committee, I like to wear it because if you guys find out that I have another dress, you're going to cut our benefits." So that's Frank. You can learn from that, I think. Anyway, we're kind of short on time, and I think those are the highlights of what I have prepared. I know that there are lots of other details and numbers and statistics about how many blind people did what and so forth, but I think given the time and everything, it's about time for me to turn it over to Kathy.
Thank you very much, Roger. Last time I tell you any stories.
That's a good one.
Someone that has done a lot for the blind and we've heard not enough about is a member of our committee. And he has always been interested in vending program, as the council has, as I have, as many of us have. It's been a place where blind people have proved that we can, blind men and women, that we can work, we can make a living. They've raised their families. And I've always had a great deal of respect for his work. And once he went on into handling work for the older blind at the Department of Rehabilitation, he helped a lot with the Blind Advisory Committee. And I'm going to tell a story on him now. He always arranged our schedule. When you are on the Blind Advisory Committee, you are governed by the Bagley-Keene Act, which means that everything you do has got to be put up on the web and sent out notices and let people know where you're going to meet. And you can't meet, talk to each other. You got to be there. And anyway, Joe handled all that. Joe Smith handled that. He would put the notices out. He would help us get our agenda together. He would help us plan our agenda. And everything went like clockwork. Well, Joe retired at the end of June, okay? So we scheduled a back meeting for the 23rd of October. October it was. And so all of a sudden, we get a notice, the meeting is canceled because they failed to put up the notice on the Bagley-Keene on the, that we were having the meeting. So anyway, the way it came about, Joe, who is now retired, was interested in the agenda. And so he contacted Kona Candela, and he said, what happened to the agenda? And that's how we got notified that they had not put it up on the website. So with that, and to tell you a lot about vending program, and when Joe's around, goodness knows what else. Here is Joe Smith.
Thank you, Kathy. This is kind of a new process for me, being out of the department now and out of vending and also. But I've been a member of CCB since the early 60s, and so I've been around and know a little bit about what has taken place, particularly in the BEP program, because I was in that program for over 30 years. And but to go back a little bit, you know, in 1934 was the beginning of the organization. In 1936, the Randolph-Shepard Act was passed in Congress, and I don't know if council had much to do with that out here in California, but certainly it showed those times, I think, were kind of headed toward the blind movement sort of taking off. In 1943, the Crowley bill was passed in the state legislature in California, and that implemented the BEP program in California. And I think Roger mentioned Crowley as being an advocate of the blind in California earlier in his little talk there too. Back in 1964, we had a BEP administrator. His name was Tony Septinelli, and I'm not sure. I came in the program in the early 60s, and Tony was a big advocate of cafeterias and snack bars for the blind. Typically, the types of facilities they had in the old days there were like little candy stands or cigar stands or cigarette stands, whatever you want to call them, in places like post offices and those type of facilities. And the feds were kind of reluctant to have blind people in making coffee, because in those days you had to pour, you know, it was all manual. You had to pour the coffee over the grounds, the water over the grounds and make the coffee. And feds were a little reluctant to have blind people doing those kind of jobs. Well, Tony Septinelli was a totally blind fellow, and he felt that blind people could do that. And I think in California, in the early 60s, we had full-blown cafeterias and everything, and there's many states that still did not implement any of those types of facilities on their properties. Tony, in one of the old ABC Digest, Tony Septinelli reported in 1964 there were 2,365 vendors throughout the country, and in California we had 225 at that time. So, you know, out of all the states, we were about a tenth of the population of the entire country. So that's quite a bit. So we had quite a few vendors back in 64. In 1969, show you some of the, I go back and I know that I attended a lot of council conferences and conventions. There are a lot of folks that, you know, we always believe that the Organized Blind started these programs, and they're the ones that are going to keep them together. And it's always, you know, it's always, you need to support those organizations always. Every once in a while, something would come up in the legislature. In 1969, there was an effort, legislative effort, to pay the BEP administrative staff out of the set-aside fund. And the Organized Blind blew them out of the water on that and got that... defeated that bill. Also in 1969, there was a bill to allow a credit on BP vendors' gross sales if they hired other blind employees to work for them along with them. And we were successful in getting that. That has evolved over the period to not just blind folks, but disabled folks. So there is a credit even today for vendors that hire disabled folks working for them. So that was a result of the blind organizations getting that through. Let's see. Early in the 70s, a Randolph Shepherd was... went through a large amendments federal amendments, and it strengthened the federal priorities. It also gave vendor committees more rights of participating in administrative decisions. It also set up benefits, funds that could be used for benefits for vendors. And shortly after that, California followed with their own legislation to implement the same regulations that were in the federal act. That was in the 70s. That also kind of made a big change, because it went from taking fees from the vendors at that time. Prior to that, in California, were based on gross sales. At that time, the federal act was changed. It moved them from gross sales to net income. And let me flip my page here. But that was in the 70s, and like I said, later in the 70s, we had California legislation that implemented the same changes as the federal act. Early in the 90s, due to some problems with the administration of the BEP program and all in the late 80s, there was a lot of problems with equipment, inventorying and all, and so in the 90s, I don't know how many of you remember this, but I remember this specifically. In the 90s, due to the problems with the inventorying and all, there was, I believe CCB had a commission bill that was, and they gave that bill spot up for the BEP, which we ended up with SB 2759. I still remember the number. And what that did was it really strengthened a lot of the oversight for particularly the equipment side of BEP. It brought in strict inventorying, on strict oversight over purchasing of equipment, inventorying of equipment, and also the disposal of equipment. And that was supported by CCB, and really they were initial in even beginning that bill back in the early 90s. That also was the time that a few of us vendors got together and started a little group called Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California. And because of these issues that were going on with BEP at that time, we really felt we needed to have a specific organization that would be affiliated with CCB and with American Council of the Blind. And so a few people like Durwood McDaniels and all came out from Texas and worked with us, and we sort of started that Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California that is still going on here with the organization. So I wanted to, and that was in the early 90s. One of the main, I think that you hear even today, that there's always efforts nationwide and statewide in many states and all for other disabled groups, opening the Randolph Shepherd program up to other disabled groups. The Organized Blind has always opposed that, and I think it's key to that opposition that has held that that side of the Randolph Shepherd Act exclusively for the blind. And I think that's important that it remain that way. And that's the one area that is still under attack almost annually, of opening the Randolph Shepherd Act to other disabled groups. And I think that's the key thing to think of now. There's a lot of efforts, a lot of changes coming down from Washington. And one of the things I think as a blind person, a person that went through a program that really, I think it was a great program and all, to keep it that way, and I certainly will support any efforts to oppose such legislation. So that's what I have from the Randolph Shepherd and BEP side. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Joe. In the BC this time, we have the story, the California story, which was something that I wrote as editor of what was then the Bulletin for the Blind, which was now before the Blind Californian. In 1959, Robert Campbell, who was the second president of the council, George Fogarty, Tom Long, and myself and several others left the convention in Oakland. There was quite a bit of friction going on between the CCB and the Federation. They attempted to make instruct our delegate before we went to the convention. We voted not to do that. Excuse me. And so I was sitting in Oakland, and Mr. Kletzing had become president. And he stood up and he said, "I know I speak for Kathy Skivers." Well, up she rose, and I said, "No, I'm capable of speaking for myself. You do not speak for me. And I've had enough of this whole thing, and I'm going. Anybody who wants with me, come ahead." And so what was called a disgruntled handful left the convention at the Leamington. And then that included Dr. Perry, Bob Campbell, the first two presidents, George Fogarty, and a whole bunch of us, Juliet Esterly. And I wrote the California story. I was so troubled about what was happening to us, and I saw the politics in CCB, and I knew from my close association with Kenneth Jergen and Dr. Tenbrook, I knew what was going on, that they were influencing through people throughout the country and trying to control. And so I wrote the California story, which I kind of equated to the shot they filed at when the Civil War started, I guess. Fort Sumter, yeah. Anyway, for almost a year, we were so disgusted and so upset that we thought maybe we wouldn't even try to do anything else, and some members didn't want to join anything else. But the more we thought about it, we decided that we were going to have to do something, because we'd all of us worked and been the leadership, and we had really worked hard for what the blind had, and we knew we had to try to keep it. So we formed the organization called the Associated Blind, which later became the Associated Blind of California. We met in Fresno, just like the other bunch, and we formed ABC, Associated Blind of California, which later became the Associated American Council of the Blind of California. And I'm sure over and over you've heard that NFB and CCB and ACB and FB should all be one nice organization. Well, the reason that it can't happen, and I for one don't think it should, is that we have a definite philosophical differences. We have. And just like the Republicans and the Democrats and many other political parties. And one of the things that always bugged me when I was lobbying, no, we don't lobby, we said we're representatives. When I was representing the blind, we didn't say lobbying because we didn't get paid, and besides, they thought we did, so we said we were representatives. Anyhow, when we went in there, it always annoyed me, because if you had a bill, you'd go around and you'd talk to every one of these people, and, "Oh, yeah, we support your bill. It's a fine idea. Good for you. We understand your problem." Well, then you'd go in there, and they'd either hold it in committee, or they'd kill it all together. But their big line that always, and I was sitting in there, and they had this gentleman from Orange County that I never liked, and the feeling was mutual, I'm sure. Anyway, it was Senator Schmidt, and he said, young lady, if you people could get together, if you blind people would come together, it would make it much easier to assist you. And I had it. I said, yeah, Senator, that's a fine idea, and just as soon as you Republicans and Democrats do it, you tell us how. And that got a terrific rise from the audience, and Nick Petras, who was senator from Oakland, was on the platform. He was one of the men I knew was with us. I got a hug right on the platform from my senator. And we always said that other differences in us and the Federation operated groups is that in our group we set term limits in ABC, and we had 6 years then. We have 8 years here now that we've merged. But we always said, and we weren't really always kidding, you didn't have to wait till somebody died to maybe someday be president. Which, yeah. We adopted a statement of principles drafted by John Hebner. He was an insurance agent from Los Angeles. Then we really did something that CCB hadn't when we elected Juliet Bent Esterly, first woman president of the Organized Blind in California. She taught Braille for years all over California, and she taught Braille at OCB too. Then in her fifth year of her three terms, she became ill, and I became president, filling in Julie's last year, and then did 6 years of my own. And the way that came about was I finished my second two-year term. That was 5 years, one for Julie, two for me. And I said very cheerfully, you know, I gave a big sigh at the end of the last meeting, and I said to George Fogarty and Bob Kimball, thank God I finished my terms. And Bob said, oh, no. And I said, what do you mean, oh, no? He said, George said, in that wonderful way he had of explaining things to people, well, you know, Kathy, he said, that 1 year was Julie's. That doesn't count. You have three of your own. So we planned that you will be having a third term. And I did. So that gave me 7 years there and eventually 6 years here. So one time or another, I've been a state president for 13 years, which is, I don't know, 13 is kind of a number. So anyway, ABC had its women presidents for 12 years, and that was followed. We were followed by Casey DeLint, who, as far as I can remember, was the only vending stand operator to be president in either CCB or CBC. AC elected its first president in 1997, woman president. That was me. And I've said earlier this evening that that took 63 years to get me. And I hope that it wasn't so bad that they wait for another 63 to get another one. Harriet Fielding was a woman who became blind. She was first Harriet Penner, and then she married. She was a reporter and a darn good one, and she lost her sight. And it was her sorrow and our in ABC. Our blessing. She took over our ABC. We call it the ABC Digest. And she did a wonderful job editing for us for many years. We had a real top-notch magazine. In the beginning, we gave awards almost from the beginning. We gave awards out recognizing the good things that our people did. And we also got into the community a little more than we had done. Mostly in CCB, we stayed pretty much to our prog things, and we didn't get into any of things. But one of the first things we brought to started was an insurance plan with a Continental Insurance Company for our members. Members could buy anything, any kind of from life insurance to catastrophic insurance at reasonable rates, and that brought us a lot of members. We donated to a new organization called Medic Alert. And contributions were made to the Braille Institute, tapes for a project in Vacaville to record books for textbook for children. We donated to that. And we bought recorders and cassette tapes for a prison in Jamestown because we knew there were many more books needed to be made available to students and others. We collected books to be sent to VA hospitals to blind people, Braille and print. And Braille books and cards were sent to TB patients in hospitals. in county hospitals. In the fall of 1961, we gave a life membership to Emma Burnham. She was Dr. Perry's devoted sister who lived with him and took such good care of him. And believe me, taking care of Doctor could be a chore. One time, George Fogarty and Bob Campbell and I were at a convention, and George thought the doctor was with Bob and me, and we thought he was with George. The doctor was with nobody. He was in his room in the hotel on the fourth floor, and we went up there, and he had not found it easy to, he came to the door, but he couldn't get it open. Well, Bob is a craftsman. Bob Campbell, in case you all don't know it, built a home. He and his 13-year-old son started. It took 3 years for them to complete it. They did every single thing in the house. It's in the hillside in Berkeley. I only wish we could have had the money to buy it, because if ever anything in this world shows what blind people could do, that house does, and it would have been such a museum. Anyway, here we were on the fourth, with Doctor on the fourth floor in the room. Bob couldn't take the door off. It wasn't kind that he could. We thought of that right away. Doctor couldn't seem to get the light, the block going right. And we were all very concerned. We had to get to him. We didn't want him left by himself. And finally, Bob gave him directions, do this, Doctor, do that. And finally, the door opened. And Bob kind of gave me a push to walk in, and I did. And Doctor got a hold of me and gave me a big kiss. He says, "Who are you?" And it made me kind of mad. And Bob said, "What's wrong with you?" He says, "He's an old man. What's wrong with you?" And I said, "Well, I know he's old, and you know he's old, but I'm not so sure he knows he's old." All the time, our love was legislation. We'd been doing it. We always fought rehab and education, social services, and all the other things. We were always there. And I remember so many times, I'm sorry to say, testifying against rehab. And I had applied for a job I wanted to go to Arkansas, and they told George Fogarty they wouldn't send me because I was too old. Gee, what would they think now? Anyway. And anyway, they sent. They didn't want me to go, so I went to the legislature, and we won a bill again. We were pretty good. They bring in bills for rehab that we didn't want, and we defeated them regularly. And I went in, and the gentleman from rehab, the director at the time, said, "Well," he said, "you beat us again." We were walking out. We remained friendly anyway. And I said, "Well, you had a chance to get rid of me, and you wouldn't do it." And George had told me 3 days before that this was a case I was denied the right to go to Arkansas to take my training. And so he said, "Get rid of you how?" I said, "I applied for to go down and get training so I could become an IRS representative, and you all said I couldn't go." And he said, "What grounds?" I said, "I'm too old and uneducated." Well, I went home. This was not too long. George called me and he said, "You know what?" I said, "What?" He said, "Things have been reversed." He said, "You leave for Arkansas on the 3rd of January, 1972. My last day as president of the association.
Kathy, you have to say that was a one-way ticket, though. You know that.
Oh, George sent me on the 3rd of January of 72, and I was on the plane almost to Arkansas when I realized I only had a one-way ticket.
That's how they get it.
So I would call George, and I would say, "George, this is too hard. I miss the kids. I want to go home. I can't do this. I hate this place. They don't even know the Civil War is over. I got to get out of here." And he would say, "Oh, but your grades are outstanding. You've done just such a superb job." And I said, "George, when are you going to send my ticket?" "Well, let's think about that. Try it." So I got to come home when my tour was done, and he was ready to send me a ticket. Anyway, we were always in fighting for whatever was going to help the blind. We were very much in support of BEP, and we were constantly fighting people who were trying to take their program over. We introduced legislation to help them on more than one occasion, and if anybody else tried to do something to them, we were there to testify for them. We got legislation to get specialized services. or had a bill put in to get a commission, and it was lost. But what we did, we got everybody to agree that they would have an entity within the organization in rehab for us instead of the commission. And we've done that quite a few times, and that's right. We finally got SB 105 enacted to help get us as a division with the help of NFBC and other agencies, and we all needed to make sure it works. So do fill out the things that you've been told about, the surveys. We worked with NFB even back in the very bad days, because Beverly Hammer and Linda Bartos and I talked to each other, and we realized that we were going to have to do something to get it so they couldn't use that business that we were fighting all the time. We worked together on a number of issues. We worked NFB at that time. CIB. You were still CCB and we were ABCB. We worked together to save the California Industries for the Blind. We're 600, 75% blind, 25% other disabled work. And Reagan got it put into private industry, and we told him it couldn't work without a subsidy. So they began to try to get rid of it. And Tony Menino, president at the time here for the council, and I worked countless hours. We, in so many meetings, we did everything we could to try to save those jobs, and we couldn't. The thing was lost, and after those 600 jobs were lost, very few of those people ever got employment. California, Bob Campbell and I served from the ABC on Reagan's Committee for the Handicapped. And I don't want to go too much further except to tell you one little story. I was very busily working at the El Mirador Hotel, getting ready to go across the street to the state capitol, when I came out of the elevator, and who came out, you know how the elevators are on two sides of the hall, who came out and almost crashed into me, and he wasn't even blind, but Governor Reagan. And he said to me, and I don't know how everybody liked his voice, but I thought it was kind of nasally. Anyway, I knew who he was. And he said, "Young lady, may I help you?" And I said, "No, sir, not right now, but you sure can give me a hand when I get across the street into your capital." So the hotel manager came rushing up, and he was horrified. You know, here I was talking to this governor. Besides, the hotel manager knew me very well. He was probably nervous. But anyway, he knew what I thought about the other side of the street. Anyway, he came, and he said, "Let me walk you across the street." Well, he never did that. The manager takes me across, and they said, "Do you do this all the time by yourself?" And I said, "Yeah, why not?" And he said, "Well, this is a terrible street." And I said, "Yeah, but it's not so bad when you get to the other side. The trick is getting there." Anyway, I came back later in the afternoon, and the same manager met me, and he said, "You got me into trouble, and I've got a bone to pick with you." I said, "What's wrong?" He said, "I went to the bank. I was going to the bank when I stopped to go to the Capitol with you. When I got in there, they robbed the place."
Oh, my!
He said, "They got our money." And I said, "Well, you just better not do that kind of thing for us anymore." I don't know how we are running on time. I looked at my clock, and I thought it said 10 after 8 when we started. Am I right, Gene?
Yes. So we're done.
We've been on for a while.
Until what? I'll give you one more story. I do want to tell you that I have the Hall of Fame here, and I'm going to ask Mike Keefley to let us put it in. It'll tell you a little bit about who's in it and what they do. But my final story is that when I testified, you had in those days two steps that you, and I was walking around, didn't have my wheelchair, and they had two steps that led up to the platform. Then you had to get up there and find your chair and sit down. Well, that was great when you're sitting in front of a whole room full, packed people, and you hope you're going to get up on that step right, and you hope you're going to find the chair and not someplace else. Anyway, George Moscone was a wonderful senator, and he helped us a lot. And he would always, if he saw me and I was going to testify, and he had a bill for us, he would always come from wherever and come up and walk up those steps with me and show me the chair, which I thought was really nice and really appreciated it. This one day, we were sitting a little bit further back than usual, and he came and got me, and there was a welfare discussion going on. And again, my buddy, Mr. Schmidt from Orange County, he was saying, well, he was saying he thought that it was all right if they have one child, they had a child, and they could have a TV, but they didn't think they should have any food more, giving them any more money for two children. If they had one, that was enough. And he said that everybody was entitled to one. And Dimley, who was a very nice senator, said, "Oh, I still have something coming." And then he said he had an objection to colored TVs. And Dimley, who was an African American, said, "Oh, there's even discrimination there." Well, the poor man was beside himself. But in the meantime, Moscone had me by the arm, and we were walking down the aisle, and he said, "Women don't have to have earrings," he said. This is still Mr. Schmidt. "Earrings are ridiculous. They should not be allowed to spend their money on that." And I knew Mr. Moscone pretty well, and I said to him, "Gee whiz, women would rather be caught without their pants and their earrings." Well... he just, at that time, we had hit the bottom step, and he went into gales of hysteria. We both started to laugh, and the senator said, "Senator, will you care to share your story with us?" And he said, "I don't think so." He said, "Would you, Mrs. Skivers?" And I said, "Not right now." And we both started in again. Anyway, I hope that you've enjoyed our history presentation. We've enjoyed giving it to you. You've got a great organization.
I would like to thank very much the History Committee and Kathy Skivers for this presentation. It brought back a lot of memories of a lot of the people from the past, my involvement with the organization. And thank you very much, and hope people have an opportunity before the convention's over to talk to all of you to answer, so they can get the answers to questions that they've always been wondering about the organization. Again, yeah. Thank you. Now we're going to have the opportunity for the organization, including myself, to meet Carmela Reining, our intern from Denmark, who is going to give us a perspective of visual impairment from the view of Denmark. I think this is going to be really interesting to see the comparisons between the two countries and the services. So let's give her a hand.
Yeah, hi. My name is Camilla Rüding, and as said, I am the intern from Denmark, and I've been here since July, and I'll unfortunately go back in December. yeah, that's very sad. I study political science, and I'm helping CCB with advocacy and governmental affairs. Before I will start my speech, I have some people I want to thank. First of all, I would like to thank Jeff Tom and the CCB Board of Directors for saying yes to having me here as an intern, and for giving me this amazing opportunity to come to U.S. and to experience a new culture and all this work. And it's very, very exciting. And I would also like to thank Jeff Tom and Leslie Tom for having me stay at their place the first month or so I was here. That was great as well. And I would like to thank Frank, Ed, and Lily, who has taken good care of me in the office, which includes strawberry ice cream.
Hey, I don't get to do that.
Yeah, and it's empty. I just wanted to tell you that. Yeah. Why am I here, and what am I going to tell you about? I would like to tell you about how it is to be visually impaired in Denmark compared to visually impaired here in U.S. or in California. I'll do that by telling a little bit about myself, my own life so far. And I would also like to tell you about the system in Denmark and what services we have. And I think that you'll be the experts about what services we have here in U.S., so I will let that be up to you. Before I even start that, I would like to be sure that everybody knows where and what Denmark is. Because I have heard many interesting but wrong ideas about that during the last 3 months. So, just so there's no doubt, Denmark is a country. Yeah. It's not a capital in another country, like Germany or Sweden. It is a country. And it's located in North Europe, in Scandinavia, south from Norway, west from Sweden, north from Germany, and east from Great Britain. And I, to do a little commercial about Denmark, I have chosen some things I want to tell you. Denmark is known for many things, but historically speaking, Vikings. Yeah, and apparently that sex, drug, and rock and roll culture hasn't really left the country, because the young Danes have the record in drinking the most in Europe. And of course, I'm not a part of that record, but we have it. We're known for a famous pop band called Aqua with a song called Barbie Girl. I don't know if you know of that one. Mm-hmm. Really bad song. We're known for H.C. Andersen and his fairy tales and The Little Mermaid. Yep. And Lego. And to end this little commercial, Obama has been to Denmark, President Obama, last month, and he'll be back in December. So come to Denmark. Okay, so now we're on the same page. So why am I here, and who am I? I was born visually impaired. My eye condition is Leber's, and I saw 20 to 200 until I was about 17, and then I think it got worse, and now I see less than 20 to 400. I grew up in Copenhagen, the capital of Denmark, and Tivoli, yeah. And The Little Mermaid is also in Copenhagen, yeah. I grew up there with my mom and my big brother. My parents got divorced when I was 4, and I have 2 more siblings, and none of them are blind. I have always been going through the normal school system in Denmark, mainstream schools. I've always believed that I could do what I wanted to do, which I know that a lot of you here in this room also believes, and that's the right way to do it. I have always done what my friends did, like climbing in trees and fall down again, and playing soccer in the schoolyard, and doing other crazy things. And I have had, and still have, 2 parents who have supported me all the way, and who have believed in me. And my mom got it very quickly. My dad was a little bit slow. For instance, when I should decide what I wanted to do with, for my future. I should decide if I wanted to go to high school or whatever I wanted. He seriously said to me, "Well, Camilla, why don't you become a garbage collector?" And nothing wrong with garbage collectors. Very important job, good paid. But if I want to be a garbage collector, at least I want to be the one who drives the truck. And and since that trip, probably only would be one trip, I decided to go to high school and take an higher education. I have always been doing a lot of sport, soccer, swimming, running, yeah, all kinds of sport, and then goalball. Yep. I started to play goalball when I was 12, and I very quickly found out that this sport was a really great sport for me, and I could go very far. It was only my talent and my physical opportunities who would decide for me what I could do. And I started on the national team when I was 13, and I've played there ever since, with some breaks where partying and boys got a little bit more of my attention. And recently, last year, I went to Beijing, and I played against U.S. and Jesse Lawrence, who is here today also. And as I've told Jesse, I'll take the gold in 2012. We'll talk about that in the bar later. Okay, and I've never really been involved in the blind community back home. I mean, I have never really been working for the Danish Association of the Blind or other organizations or agencies. I have been trying to make a difference with just living and doing what I wanted to do. And believe that having a visual impairment shouldn't stop you from doing anything. And I guess that's how most of you here in this room also believe. But when I finished high school, I worked 5 months in an exhibition called Dialogue in the Dark, which purpose was to show sighted people a little bit about how it is to be blind. So blind or visually impaired guides guided people around in a completely dark exhibition where there was time for questions in the end. And got lots of interesting questions here. The classic one, like, how many fingers do I have here? And then the more interesting one, can blind people have sex?
What's the answer?
And yes, the answer was yes. And I didn't show it, but I so after that, I moved across the country to study political science. And I started there in 2006, and I got my bachelor degree this summer. And and this internship is a part of my master degree in political science. And the way I got here is actually interesting. And yesterday we had a little presentation about social networking. And it was actually social networking that got me here. I contacted the Danish Association of the Blind, and one of the persons there knew a person here in California who knew Jeff, Tom, and then, yeah, I got here. And and yeah, that was a little bit about myself and my story. And now I want to tell you more about what differences I have experiences between Denmark and U.S., both related to being blind, but also in general, because it's important to have the general terms with you, because to understand what kind of services we have in Denmark that's different from here in U.S. When I got here in July, I experienced a lot of new things. One of the first things I experienced was the audio pedestrian signals. We have audio pedestrian signals in Denmark. It's not that. It's just different from here. Here I noticed we have two birds. And nothing wrong with birds. And I'm just really confused every time I go to a to an in intersection and I'm kind of feeling, which bird is for which way? And I have been here 3 months and I'm still confused. And the next thought I have is, like, is these birds only birds that exist here in U.S. or what? Because I have... We don't have those birds in Denmark. The way it works in Denmark is that it beeps slowly when it's red and faster when it's green. And it doesn't matter which way you're going. We are a little bit more simple, I guess. I don't know what's the best of this, but... one of the next things I noticed was the street system. I know that this is not the way it is in every city in U.S., but in Sacramento, downtown Sacramento, and in parts of the Bay Area, we have letters and numbers for streets, which means that it's really hard to get lost. at least if you can count and you know the alphabet. we don't have that in Denmark, either because we are more stupid or more creative. I don't really know that, but... the next thing I noticed was the currency. U.S., come on, this doesn't work. It really doesn't work. I'm kind of disappointed, especially because
we are too.
And I know you're working on it. Trust me, I've read all the resolutions for CCB the last 15 years, and last week actually found one of my Danish money and have brought them with me because we know how to do it in Denmark. And I'm totally willing to show off. So I will have them on me the rest of the evening and in the bar later. So just come, stop by and say, show me your money and I'll do that. another thing is that you have talking ATMs here, which is a really, really good thing. We don't have that in Denmark, and I don't know why. We are just a little bit slow, I guess. Good thing. I also noticed that people, and this is actually quite interesting, people's mentality here in U.S. are different from it is in Denmark. American people are much more open to strangers. And it has shown me in different ways. It's easier to get help. You don't have to look lost here to get help. You have to do that in Denmark. I have gotten more phone numbers for guys during the last... during the last 3 months, and I got in Denmark during the last 3 years. and I don't look especially exotic or anything. And okay, it could be my Danish accent, but I think it's actually only about people's mentality and how open we are. And it's not that Danes are bad people. or I don't think so. but it's just different. And when I should make the speech, I really wanted to be able to say that blind people are different here in US. I really wanted to have, you know, like a really good thing that, oh, this is just different. But it's not. I was disappointed there. I can't really say that blind Danes are different from blind Americans or the other way around. Other than the culture is different, but that's a completely different thing. So that was my first impressions when I got here. More generally speaking, Denmark is a very small country. We have 5.3 million people. In US we have, what, more than 300 million? blind people, we have 25,000 legally blind people in Denmark. I don't know how many blind people there is here in the US, but much more than that. A thing that is different, that's very important to keep in mind when I later on tell you about the services we have in Denmark, is the welfare system. We have universal welfare system in Denmark, which you don't have here in US. We pay the highest taxes in the world. You don't do that here. yeah, okay, well, come to Denmark and we can talk about it. we have free education in Denmark, unless you choose to go to a private university or private high school, then you have to pay a little bit for that. But our public schools are good. We don't have to pay out of the pocket when we go to our doctor, and we don't pay for things when we go to a public hospital, which is different from here. I have actually been to a doctor here, and it was expensive. especially when nothing was wrong. But and we have, because of the size of the country and because of our welfare system, we have a pretty good public transportation system. Half the price, I guess, in most of the towns in Denmark if you're blind. But there is this little thing about it that you have to live in the city, which I don't really get, because, I mean, I'm not less blind just because I live in another city. But but it is like that somewhere, in Copenhagen, for instance. Very important city, though. And we don't have power transit in Denmark, which you have here, I know. so that's are some general things that are different in the two countries. And also, in the blind field, we have only one blind organization. It's the Danish Association of the Blind, and it has right now 10,500 members. It's led by blind and visually impaired people, like the California Council of the Blind is, and it works in about the same way, just have more members. And we don't have that competition between the CCB and NFB, for instance. So that's a difference. On the things that we can get in Denmark, if you're a visually impaired or blind person, I'll start by telling you about the general things that you can get no matter what age you have, and then I'll go more into detail about if you're a child and if you're a student, if you work, and if you're an older person. General things We have this thing, and I try to translate it. It doesn't really work, but I'll explain it. So, more expensive, which is 1,500 kroner, which is about $250 per month that you can get to cover for any kind of expenses that are related to your disability. And this is not just for blind people, this is for disabled in general. Like I need a lot of light if I wanted to see well. So my electricity bill will be much higher than normally. So I can get those money to cover for that. And people, blind people also choose to do it because they use taxis more than other people do. I actually have this service. And then there is another one. It's a tenant, which means that you can have 15 hours during a month with an attendant that who can go with you to the grocery store, who can go with you to IKEA and choose your new bed, or whatever you want. Not your gardener. Not that kind of service things. And it's the county is your the department who choose the persons and who pays for this person. So you're not completely in charge of what you can do with this person. Then we have cheaper public transportation, which you can get half price and sometimes actually for free, and you can get an attendant with you if you go cross country trains, so that I only have to pay for my ticket and I can get my friend with me for free. And it's also like that in some theaters and some amusement parks, though, and I have tried to break this rule, it doesn't work. In an amusement park, if you go in, your attendant has to go with you to all the attractions that you are going to. He or she can't go to the roller coaster that you don't want to go to. I have tried it; doesn't work. And it's also possible to get all your adapted products paid for them. Yeah, and it doesn't matter. What it you apply for it, and for instance, I could apply for a mobile speak on my cell phone, and I would have to fill out an application saying what do I want, how much do I see, and so forth, and I will get it eventually, and I say eventually because it can take 4 months or so, but. That's a thing I'll come back to later. But adapted products, you can get them, and you can get them paid for them, no matter what it is, canes, mobile speak software to a computer, so forth. Guide dogs, you also can apply for that, and they will pay for it. Your county or the state will pay for it. We have only one guide dog school in Denmark, by the way. So that's that are the general things, and now more specific, if you're a child, we have this arrangement, translated could be something like education counselor, which is a person who would follow you from the age of 6 to 18, something like that, during your school time, and it's a person that your parents can come to if they have any kind of questions that are related to being blind. And it's also a person who would go to you when you, for instance, start high school. I started my high school, and the second day I went there, my teacher, counselor, and I had a meeting with all my teachers, telling about what this means to be blind, and what they could do, and what they should do, and how they would do it to help me get through this high school. So in that way, it's a really good thing. We also have this. We have one blind school in Denmark, and it's not. It's a school that you only go to if you have another disability than blindness. I mean, if you have more than blindness, and else they have some courses which could be like getting better to read, doing sport, things like that. And it's it has been a really great opportunity for me to meet other blind kids or young people. And official reason for being there is, of course, to be better to read, to be better to do sport. But it's a place where you learn to break the rules and and learn to be on your own and to do all the things that your parents don't want you to do. And that's a good place. So that is the things you get when you're a kid. When you're a student, you get every student in Denmark, no matter what you have or don't have, gets a monthly stipendia, which if you have a physical disability, you will get double. So I get I'll get paid for getting an education. Yeah, it sounds really good, but yeah, remember the welfare system. I get around $1,500 per month for studying. Yeah, they do it. The reason why we get double when you have an disability is probably because it makes you concentrate on your study, and it can help you to complete your study in time and not taking extra semesters. And for me, it has worked. So yeah, you'll get your adapted products that you need to complete your study: computer, scanner, software, CCTV, whatever. And you can get 100 hours of secretary help per semester. That, of course, again, only is to use for your study. It has been a really good help for me, especially here my last semester where I should write my bachelor paper, and it was on my own and I had to do all the research and all that on my own. It was really good to have a help, a sighted assistant. You also get extra time or extra anything to your exams, and it won't stand on your transcription, which is good. So that's basically what happens when you're a student, and I'll tell more about that tomorrow morning at 7:30 when I'm not drunk at all. And so come 7:30 and if you are in work, if you work as a visually impaired or blind person, you can get a secretary 20 hours per week if you are a full-time worker. And you'll get your adapted products if it's products that your employer doesn't give to you just because you work there. I mean, usually you will get your work computer. But what you won't get is your software. So that will be a thing that you will get from the county. We have an unemployment rate on 70%, like here. Pretty bad. And what about those 70%? What do they live? How do they live? If you're young or younger, you'll get some rehabilitation benefits, social benefits. If you're older, you'll get disability pension, which is a thing that's right about getting out of the system. I wouldn't be able to apply for a disability pension. I'm too young for that. In general, not just because I'm 23, but I can't do it. It's an old thing that you could do 10 years ago. 10 years ago. So what? Yeah, they're phasing it out. Right. So that's how it looks for employers and employees. Sorry. If you're an older person, you will get the same services as the general things I described some minutes ago. And this sounds actually pretty good. I mean, if it works, it sounds good. But it doesn't. We have... It takes a lot of time to get these things. You have to constantly call your counselor, call your county, like here. And I mean, I am personally, I have gotten all the things I needed, but I have also called them. Not twice a day, maybe, but every day then. And I continue until they give me what I need and what I have the right to get. Yeah. But not every person is like that. And it shouldn't be like that. You should get it just because you have the rights to get it.
That's right.
And I know that that's a problem here as well. And it's like that in Denmark. Basically, we're actually facing the same problems in the two countries. We are trying to get people in work. We are trying to get better transportation, public transportation. We are trying to get better access to different things. And in general, just let us be more independent. And that's the thing that we are facing in Denmark and then you are facing here in U.S. When I came here, or should come here to U.S., I should get a visa. And to get that, you need to apply for it. And my visa application had some long application, by the way. But one of the things was that I should answer two questions. And one of the questions was, how will you use this U.S. internship upon your return home to Scandinavia? At that time, I thought, well, I will write anything because I just want my visa. So I was really creative and thought this was really good, this thing I wrote. And what I basically wrote was, I will try to take the best American disability policies with me home to Denmark and try to use them in Danish context. Again, at that time, I just wrote that. But I've learned more now, and I actually think that that I'll try and use some of it, and I actually think that And I've really been thinking about what is good here and what could we learn from you here. It's definitely not the birds I would take with me home. And the street system are a little bit difficult to change, and the personalities are also difficult. So what I've noticed, though, is that I have met and heard about so many people here in the U.S., here in California, CCB, in other organizations, who... Oh, I'll be careful here. who has
ice cream for you?
Who has a passion for doing good things for blind people to make a difference, to get better conditions for blind people in the society? And I have there are lots of energy about this here. Much more than I think we have in Denmark. And I guess some of it is because we don't have to fight for that much, many things in Denmark, because many things we should get just because we have the system we have. That we don't get it is just another story. But I think what we can learn is that we really need to put more energy into this, and we really need to change some things, like you're trying to do here. And I don't know if I am going to work for the Danish Association of the Blind. I actually doubt it, but I will definitely do my things to take some of this energy back to Denmark and see what I can do for changing things there. So that was a little bit about me and about Denmark. And if anybody has some questions, there'll be time for that now.
I'm not going to. Unfortunately, we won't be able
okay,
to do that. But the bar is a good. Well, we're checking out the money.
That was excellent, Camilla. I think it was a very informative and something I think we all have a better understanding about your nation. And I was aware it was his country. And someday hope to go there. I used to love cross-country skiing before skiing accidents. I think we're very fortunate to have her in our office, and she's been an asset, I understand. Okay, I know it's very late. We still got a lot more things to do. We got the ACB report, President Mitch Pomerantz. It's yours, Mitch.
Someone who gets no introduction.
Ladies, a tough act to follow, particularly given the hour. I will try to not assist in setting a record for the longest Friday night session in CCB history. I will. I think though, the first thing I need to say is that it is truly an honor to be able to participate in the 75th anniversary of the California Council of the Blind. And it gave me pause this afternoon to realize that I have now been a member of CCB for 1 year short of half of that 75 years. Yeah, I joined when I was 10. So I wanted to talk tonight about challenges, opportunities, and responsibilities facing CCB and ACB. I think, however, I will shorten my remarks. The only folks who will hear the full text of this presentation will be the Gills, because Donna and I will be up in Washington State next weekend at the WCB convention. But we'll try to hurry this along some. As we approach the final months of the first decade of the 21st century, blind and visually impaired people face daunting and unprecedented challenges to life as we've experienced it for the past two decades or so. Many would argue that this isn't necessarily a bad thing. After all, the blind are, with some exceptions, viewed as being part of the lower socioeconomic stratum of society. Perhaps a shakeup in the existing order would be a good thing. Unfortunately, the changes I'm presently seeing spell tougher, not easier times for us. The challenges we all know, I think. There are three that I consider external and which affect all blind and visually impaired people, and those would be education, rehabilitation, and employment. The two internal challenges to this organization are fundraising and membership development. And I won't say much about those challenges in the interest of saving time, but I think we all know what those are. So let me move on to talk about some of the opportunities that ACB has taken. The opportunities we've created within this organizations, in this organization, both the state and national, the initiatives ACB have undertaken to improve the lives of all blind and visually impaired people. Firstly, in the legal arena, let's talk about the Social Security case. In September, our suit against the Social Security Administration went to trial in San Francisco. Within the past couple of weeks, the judge issued a decision favorable to blind people and to the American Council of the Blind. That decision requires SSA to provide blind and visually impaired recipients and representative payees letters and other written information in Braille and or CD, and in large print and audio cassette on a case-by-case basis. Our executive director, Melanie Brunson, along with several ACB members, including Bernice Kandarian and Marvelena Quesada, testified at that trial. Other CCB members also assisted behind the scenes. I want to publicly thank them, as well as Arlene Mayerson, lead attorney for DREDEF, the Disability Rights Education and Defense Fund, for their efforts on ACB and CCB's behalf. We have won a tremendous victory, one which everyone here should be justifiably proud. Let's talk about accessible currency. The long-awaited Treasury Department report, compiled by the consultant many of you met at the 2008 National Convention in Louisville, was released in August. We feel strongly that this report seriously undercounts the current and projected numbers of blind and visually impaired people who would benefit substantially from accessible currency, among other flaws. ACB is consulting with our attorney, Jeffrey Levitke, on how best to express our concerns relative to the report. Talk about our ASU Kindle litigation. As you may be aware, in an unprecedented collaborative effort, ACB joined with the National Federation of the Blind in June to challenge Arizona State University and indirectly several other universities around the country, which chose to use the inaccessible Kindle 2 e-book reader in several of their classes. The Kindle's menus are wholly inaccessible to blind people and hence place our students at a tremendous disadvantage as compared to their sighted classmates. ACB will do whatever we must to halt the use of the Kindle within higher education until such time as Amazon markets a fully accessible device and resists the Authors Guild pressure to turn off the text-to-speech feature on the Kindle. Here in California, if you've not heard, higher education officials are already talking about doing away with textbooks altogether and replacing them with Kindles or similar devices. If we think that blind and visually impaired students are at a disadvantage in school now, wait until they're competing against their sighted peers. And what they are doing, the sighted peers, the sighted students have Kindles, and our students must rely upon underfunded and understaffed disabled student services facilities for their accessible textbooks. It's not going to work, folks. ACB has worked with Lainey Feingold and Linda Dardarian for 14 years using the technique of structured negotiations to achieve enhanced access to goods and services for blind and visually impaired persons. You will hear from Lainey tomorrow, so I won't steal any of her thunder, but I have a very extensive list of companies and services which are now accessible to us as a result. I do want, however, to acknowledge her and Linda's hard work on our behalf. What the two of them have accomplished during those 14 years is absolutely tremendous. Thank you. Let's talk about legislation. H.R. 734 and Senate Bill 841, the Pedestrian Safety Enhancement Act, would have the Transportation Secretary conduct a study which would establish a standard for minimum sound information necessary to be conveyed by hybrid vehicles to blind and visually impaired pedestrians. Our guest this afternoon slightly misstated the bills, but that's okay. The House bill has 147 co-sponsors, and Congress members Towne, the bill's author, and Stearns are calling for a hearing in the Energy and Commerce Committee. I will be going back to Washington, D.C. to testify on our behalf just as soon as we get word that the hearing has been scheduled. In the Senate, S-841 has only 8 co-sponsors to date. And Senators Boxer and Feinstein are not among them.
That's right.
Mr. Welty.
I've been in contact with both of them.
We've got a lot of work to do. Additionally, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration, NHTSA, is currently conducting similar research, which is scheduled to be completed by this January. What the gentleman this afternoon misstated is that that research has nothing to do with this bill. That occurred as a result of efforts by many, but it was separate and apart from our legislative efforts. Hybrid vehicles are posing a growing threat to our safety and independent mobility as more of them take to the nation's roadways, particularly here in California. Let me talk about H.R. 3101, the 21st Century Communications and Video Accessibility Act, which would restore the FCC's modest requirements for production of video description to primetime television, including digital TV and the Internet, require non-visual access to on-screen emergency warnings, and require all devices that receive playback and video programming to be accessible, e.g. on-screen menus. ACB needs many more co-sponsors than we have at the present time if 3101 is to become law. And we need your assistance to obtain those co-sponsors. Just this morning, I spoke with Jeff and with Frank and with Kathy. One of the keys to this legislation is a gentleman that some of us know well, at least by reputation. We've never met him, and that's Congressman Henry Waxman from the west side of Los Angeles and part of the San Fernando Valley. Those of you who are in his district, we need to hear from you, because it is my intention over the next 2 months, with Frank's assistance and others, to visit Mr. Waxman and to let him know that he has a key role to play in assisting us in getting both 3101 as well as H.R. 734 passed. Given the challenges and opportunities presented here, no member of this organization has the luxury of complacency or apathy. If ACB can work with NFB, you can work with folks that maybe you don't personally like, but that's not important. Any personal differences cannot be more important than participation in affiliate and or national advocacy efforts. In working together with our blind and visually impaired brothers and sisters, in fighting to maintain and expand the relatively small piece of the economic pie we've struggled to carve out for ourselves, we can no longer afford complacency or apathy, especially among our leadership, local and state. We can no longer afford to let personal differences keep us from getting involved, because if we fail to rise to the aforementioned challenges by supporting the legal and legislative opportunities presently available, there will come a time, and not too long from now, when specialized programs and services for blind and visually impaired people will disappear altogether. We already see what's happening to the Randolph Shepherd program in this and other states. It can happen to other programs as well. And perhaps in our lifetimes, if enough of us choose apathy over involvement, there won't even be a CCB or an American Council of the Blind. That would be a tragedy indeed. Each and every one of us has a tremendous responsibility, a responsibility to the brave and visionary men and women who we heard about earlier this evening, who founded this great organization in 1961. a responsibility to our contemporaries who have yet to fully understand the importance of the work CCB and ACB do on their behalf, and a responsibility to those blind and visually impaired youth who we hope and pray will follow in our footsteps someday, not too long from now, because a lot of us would like to take a break. We cannot, must not let them down. Please share this responsibility with me. Thank you and take care.
Thank you, Mitch. Okay. It's time to get the CCB report from President Tom.
Well, actually, I think Mitch gave a fine report, and I think we could just skip mine for now. How's this? How do you like guys like this convention? Isn't this a great convention?
Yeah.
Yeah, it really is. And, you know, I'm going to shorten mine a little bit, too, here. But, you know, we're going to have a really great banquet tomorrow. In fact, you know, Al Gill is our MC. And, you know, he usually does this Greyhound bus thing. But I don't know all the details, but I heard a rumor that he's not doing the bus this time. He's actually driving on stage on Greyhound bus. Now, I'm going to open with, you know, you're supposed to have your biggest applause line near the end. I'm going to open, and I'm going to break that rule. I'm going to have mine at the beginning. I haven't said it yet. My applause line is as follows. You only get to hear me two more times. See, I knew that would, that there the applause. Okay. Well, you know, we hear all these commercials. We've been in business 10 years, 20 years, 25 years, whatever. Yeah. Well, we're 75 years, guys. That's chicken feed. 1934, boy, we've been hearing a lot about 1934 and our beginnings. The world was undergoing a time of profound crisis between one world war and another. Hitler was cementing his power in Germany, and the world, the time was fast approaching when he would begin the expansion of the Third Reich. The country was mired in the Great Depression, with unemployment and the economic meltdown at levels unheard of even today. But there were also signs of hope. FDR was working for his New Deal, essentially the beginning of the public sector becoming a proactive player in the provision of social programs for disadvantaged members of society. California had recently enacted its general assistance program, which even today provides assistance to those indigents without any other means of support. And other programs, such as Randolph Shepherd, as we have heard, which involve federal-state partnerships, would soon be enacted. And here in Fresno, what might well be claimed as the birth of the disability rights movement was beginning to take place. We were not the first state organization of blind and visually impaired consumers, but the founders of CCB, with names such as Newell Perry, Jacobus Tenbrook, Juliet Bent, Bob Campbell, George Fogarty, Perry Sundquist, and others, subsequently spearheaded the founding of the National Federation of the Blind, the first true national disability rights organization. These great men and women dared to challenge the authority of well-intentioned sighted individuals and let the world know that people who are blind or have low vision know best what their needs are and how they can be met. Self-empowerment and self-determination, two of the most important principles of the disability rights movement, began to emerge not with the Independent Living Center movement several decades later, but in Fresno, California in 1934. And we should be very, very proud of our legacy. the Kathy Skivers, the Winifred Downings, and Frank, the recently deceased Frank Silva and his widow Georgine, they know this. They know the legacy that we have. We need to appreciate that legacy. I think that, many of us look at those times as fascinating trivia without really grasping, at least on an emotional level, how much we owe to that small group of intrepid souls. Fast forward 75 years. In some ways, that old adage, the more things change, the more they remain the same, applies. We are, of course, again in the midst of rough economic times, albeit there are hopeful signs of a turnaround, well, perhaps, and one that in California, at least, may take many years to happen. We don't have the looming threat of a Hitler, but international terrorism is likely to be a serious concern for the foreseeable future. And that threat creates great uncertainty as to what our role in the world can or should be. But the difference between this era and that one are certainly obvious. The information age is upon us, unless you're blind, that is. The problem isn't getting the information. It's really determining which information is relevant and being able to sift through it all. The world is changing at an ever-increasing rate, never before seen by mankind. In developing countries, cell phones, the internet, and other modern marvels are becoming as great a part of the landscape as the ever-present threats of epidemics and starvation and low literacy rates. Closer to home, these economic times are, instead of leading to new efforts to help low-income people, as they did in 1934, are resulting in program reductions, so that those least able to afford it are forced to bear, at least in part, the burden of reducing state expenditures. SSI, IHSS, Medi-Cal, public transit, senior services, rehabilitation services, and those for children are being impacted. And in many cases, when federal stimulus efforts end, even deeper reductions may need to occur unless the economic recovery is quicker than many expect. But what about the state of the California Council of the Blind? How are we faring 3/4 of a century after our birth? Before we take that look, I would like to formally present to you our new staff member, Lily McRae, whom so many of you have met this weekend. Let's hear it for Lily. She's been a real breath of fresh air in our office, young, new approach, new ideas, fantastic work ethic, and I think that her level of commitment and her personality are going to make her an asset to the California Council of the Blind, and we're really happy to have her. So let's start taking a look at CCB, and let's look at one of those areas that Mitch decided not to cover, and that's membership. In 2008, we had a drop in membership of approximately 2 or 3%. That is unacceptable. It looks as if things are turning around this year. Final numbers aren't in yet, but both local chapter numbers and member-at-large numbers appear as if they will either rise or, at worst, be similar to last year's. Special interest affiliate number is a little more difficult to calculate sometimes, especially when rosters aren't complete or in on time, then I would have to tell you that's a problem. But suffice it to say that even if we retain the members we have, or at least retain the numbers we have, that's not good enough. The population of blind and low vision persons is going up every year in this country, as we well know, both because population in general is going up and because of the graying of our population. And we're not keeping up. We're not gaining these members. Are we going to become an irrelevancy in 10 or 20 years? Well, we hope not. But it's really up to us, and we all know that membership is primarily a one-on-one development that needs to take place on the bus, in a paratransit van, in the library, wherever we see a blind or visually impaired person. We need to engage them in dialogue, show them how much CCB can do for them, can offer for them and the opportunities that it provides for all of us. How many, I don't know how many in here, you know, remember the story of Rhonda King, a sort of a rags to riches story. That woman, as she would have personally admitted many times, was basically lost. And after she lost her sight and got into CCB, she became a new person. Went, got her degree, and was on the way to incredible success before her tragic death took her away at such a young age. But it isn't just the Rhonda Kings. There's so many of us whose lives have been changed by this organization. I know I am one. I would never be what I am today were it not for CCB. And yet, we don't seem to be able to, or aren't trying hard enough to get that spirit out there and get folks in this organization. Because we should not have a static membership in California. We should be increasing membership. We have 1,300 members this year. We need to try for 1,400 next year. Each chapter doing a little bit, and we can get there. So let's commit ourselves in 2010 to trying to increase membership. I do want to give some props here and a shout out to Blind Students of California. Brandy Morgan, Lena Vandy, they are trying to do what is very, very difficult and has not really been well done since about the mid-80s, and that is to establish a good infrastructure so that we can have a fine student group in California. And I think that you're going to see next year when I give my last presidential report that BSC is going to be a highlight of that report, and I'm really pleased at what they are trying to do. I also want to mention one other idea that is not just related to membership, but it has certainly an effect on membership as well as many other things. We had a Southern California leaders meeting back in August, I believe, and one of the ideas that came out of that was we really need a calendar of events, both on the web and hopefully in other mechanisms for those many of us who prefer to do things on media other than the web, so that people around the state can know what is going on in other chapters and to avoid conflicts so that they can be a part of other chapters' doings. Well, Joel Isaacs and I were tasked to do that, and I regret that I didn't get on it quite as quickly as I would have liked. And then just about the time Joel and I were really sitting down to get it done, why the server crashed, and so we've sort of been behind the eight ball a little bit. However, things are getting back to normal again. We're going to sit down. We're going to get a protocol done. And I guarantee you that next year we will have in operation the mechanism for a statewide calendar, so that when that mechanism is up and running, it's going to be up to you chapters to get the information in, however it's going to work, to make it a real success. So, but we will have that done next year. Okay, let's move now to our financial situation. Not something I love talking about, but something that has to be dealt with. We're still facing a very uncertain financial future. The board had to take one of the worst votes that it's ever taken, in my opinion. Not that I was opposed to it, but it's not a happy thing to have done. And that was to eliminate funding for next year's legislative seminar. We're still hoping that there will be ways around, without expending any money, to get people back there. We're going to try to explore that. But taking that kind of a vote shows the extreme nature of the problems that we face. We have not been able to replace the large influx of income that we had from vehicle donations several years ago. We do, however, have somewhat of an increased window of opportunity because of the stock market's return this year. If it had kept going down like it was last year, we'd really be in dire straits. But we do have to continue with fundraising efforts. We do a lot of excellent fundraising internally, but we do have to do far more externally. My biggest regret as president is that I haven't been able to achieve more in the fundraising realm. But in this last year, I do hope that we can all do better, because it's going to take a united effort from all of us. I know Rhonda's up there looking down at us with that incredible fundraiser that she is, thinking, boy, these guys need to do a little more, because I would have. I think that we should try. We will, of course, work on grants and other types of fundraisers with staff help and with your help. But these are often hit and miss. And so far, they've been more missed than hit, and they may continue to be. I truly think we need to begin to establish a fundraising tradition. I would like to see some type of event, and we're going to work on it very early in the next year, perhaps in the fall. It might be some kind of a walkathon or dogathon event or something, but we'll have to decide on it. Some type of event that will be held in perhaps three or four places around the state that can bring in money not only from our own people, but from the community. And whatever the event is, it should be the type of event we can use as a fundraising tradition. This is going to involve fundraising committee work, it's going to involve board work, and it's going to ultimately involve, if we get it off the ground, work by all of you, all of us, as rank and file CCB members. Because without a good fundraising tradition in our back pocket, we can't lead on into the future to pull ourselves up from our bootstraps and really make something of ourselves and diversify and increase our income over the next 5-10 years. So finally, let's turn to why we're all really here. We're here to improve the lives of persons who are blind or visually impaired. I think the commitment and dedication of our founders is best illustrated by something that has occurred at this convention. As you know, Ed Ames, an ardent advocate for persons with disabilities, and especially those with visual impairments in Fresno, died last week. And yet, his widow, Toni, is here with us. Was here a couple days ago with several of us out looking at a roundabout. She has exhibited the type of commitment to us, to her late husband, and to blind and visually impaired persons that we all need to demonstrate, that we all need to emulate. And I'd like to hear a round of applause for Toni. There's so many other things I could cover. I won't mention anything on Lainey and Linda. We will hear from Lainey tomorrow, and Mitch did a very good job of covering that. So I will skip that particular item, but it will be really good to see Lainey tomorrow, and she will be at our banquet as well. I would like to cover a couple of things, however. Earlier this year, L.A. County members made a major difference when they made sure that LAMTA was going to swiftly implement light rail car barrier modifications to prevent further death or serious injury as occurred earlier this year. Just recently, they did it again, forcing Verizon to raise the height of telephone, or to agree to raise the height of telephone boxes being installed in the county to a level that should not impose a severe safety hazard for blind and low vision travelers. Verizon wasn't overly willing to work with them at the outset, but their advocacy changed, but the advocacy of our members changed their tune. As we are doing in Sacramento, I'd urge those of you in your localities to see if those boxes are being installed in your vicinity and make sure that Verizon will be equally proactive. In both these endeavors, I'd like to give special kudos to Donna Pomerantz and Ken Metz for their outstanding work. Next, I'd like to briefly, only because of the time, mention what a great job under extraordinarily difficult circumstances that Frank Welty has been doing this year. Let's hear it. Absolutely. You know, this is about as difficult a year to accomplish anything as you could ever imagine, as Dan, I think, would attest. You know, it's a year when you know, the Republicans don't want to have anything to do with us, and the Democrats just want to sell us out. And that's about that's about the extent of it. But we continue to testify. We continue to try and make an impact. And if we're to make a greater impact in the years to come, when some money may return into the economy, there's going to be a real fight for dollars. And when Frank puts out a call for testimony, puts out a call for letters, for phone calls, for emails, unless you do something, he might as well not even be there. So it's going to be up to you to make an impact in the years to come. So we really owe a debt of gratitude for Frank. He has begun to make a name for himself. He has begun to show himself to be a player in the community let's see, we're not lobbyists. What are we? What would we be called there? Representatives. There you go. See, we've got to get the right person. And I think in the years to come, he is going to make a difference, but only with your help. So where are we? What kind of an organization do we have? Are we going to show the commitment that our founders showed us 75 years ago? Are we going to show in 25 years, will people say of us that on our 100th anniversary, our last 25 years was our best 25 years?
Yes.
Maybe. But if we do show that, it's all up to you and me. Because without the type of spirit and without the type of commitment that our founder showed 75 years ago, as Mitch alluded to earlier, this organization could be a shell of its former self. With that commitment, with that spirit, we can make the lives of blind and visually impaired individuals far better than they have ever been before. Let's rededicate ourselves to our mission. Let's make this organization the best that it can be. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. President Tom. It's been a long evening. You probably want to take a few minutes, just a quick stand, because I'm going to turn the mic over to Jeff to conduct the elections. Remember, the elections are important. This is new leadership who help give new direction. I'm certain if we do this right, it won't be midnight.
Remember, we were here till about 5 or 10 after, so we want to beat. We don't want to make Mitch correct, and now we want to beat that record.
Yeah.
Oh God, I don't have my badge.
And just one thing, just as a reminder, while the rest of you after the elections are going to hospitality and having a good evening, Resolutions Committee will be meetings, and again, after the election, the deadline for any resolutions needs to be given to Gabe or to any one of us. We'll take it there, and we will spend the rest of the night working on your resolutions while you're sleeping. Thank you.
Okay, take your seats. We're going to roll here, guys. Get your badges on or out or whatever. Those badges out. You'll need him within a few minutes anyway. We'll get started, though, because I...
We need that orange...
Okay, the first office, the first office. It's a rowdy crowd. Always gets rowdy during elections. Okay, the first office this time for up for election is second vice president. The slate, the nominee for the nominations committee is Donna Pomerantz. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Is the motion nominations be closed and that Donna be elected by acclamation? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Donna, you are the winner. You are a head to a mic.
I just want to say thank you to everybody, and we're all going to be busy together.
Not true. Okay. The next office, the other officer up this time, is that of secretary. The nominee is Gabe Griffith. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? The motion to be closed and he be elected by acclamation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Mr. Griffith, you are the winner. Head to a mic.
Thank you, everybody. I've had the honor of serving this position for the last 2 years, and I look forward to serving in this position for at least the next 2 years.
All right. Thank you. 2 years and 2 months, actually. Okay. Now we go to the board of directors. Our first nominee is Jerry Arakawa. Are there other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? There's a motion that nominations be closed and that Jerry be elected by acclamation. All those in favor, we haven't actually said they're in favor yet. All opposed. And there it is. Jerry, you are the winner. Come on. Even I'm getting tired.
Well, thank you very much. Boy, it hardly seems possible that this is my last term on the board. I've found it such an exhilarating experience, and I can't tell you how pleased and how humbled I am that you, the membership, have placed your trust in me. And once again, I will do my best, and I hope we're all inspired by the great word from Mitch and Jeff this evening. I certainly was. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Jerry. Okay. The next nominee that I have on my list is Peter Pardini. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? There's a motion nomination to close. Peter be elected by acclamation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed. Abstentions. Peter, you've been elected.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I'm looking forward to the next 2 years of serving on the board of directors. And I will work hard with Donna and everybody on the board, because we're in a great organization. We want to continue our great success. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay. We now have three left. Yes.
Point of information.
Yes.
Which position is it that Richard is leaving this year?
Do we have a nomination for that spot?
We have, yes. We have three more left. I will tell you who they are. We have Foster Brown. We have, and that's the one I believe that Richard had. We have Artis Bazin, which was a position formerly or currently held by Ann. And we have Linda Perrell, which was a position currently held by Linda Perrell. Very good, class. Okay. So, the first nominee of the three that I have on as in that order is Foster Brown. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? There's a motion to close nominations and elect Foster Brown by acclamation. All those in favor say aye. All opposed? Foster Brown is a member of the board. Or will be, I should say.
Thank you very much. I look forward to serving on the board for CCB. Thank you.
Okay, so the next nominee is Artis Bazin. Are there any other nominations?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I nominate Dan Kaiser. He has an interest in...
Whoa. He has or has not?
Has.
Okay. The name of Dan Kaiser has been placed in nomination. Are there any other nominations? Okay, the name of David Hanlon has been placed in nomination. Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? Are there any other nominations? There's a motion nominations be closed. All those in favor say aye. All those opposed? We can't elect the three of them by acclamation, so therefore we have an election. Okay, now the candidates in this election, we will in a minute, but the candidates are Bazin, Kaiser, and Hanlon. Artis, who are your seconders going to be?
Dave Griffith. And Richard
Rayletta. Okay, so Gabe and Richard. Dan, your seconders are going to be?
My seconders are going to be Dave Jackson and Catherine Skyler.
Okay. David, who are your seconders going to be? Okay, you can have one. There's nothing that bars you from just using one person. Okay, there will be 5 minutes split between the two seconders, and in Gina's case, she'll get the whole enchilada. So, Artis, your seconders can go first. As soon as they get to a mic and the first one starts, we will start the 5 minutes, and I'm going to have it. Ed, you got a stopwatch? Or a watch, I mean.
Okay. I am honored this evening to be able to stand and speak for Artis Bazin. Artis has worked for this organization for many years. Her accomplishments include being the secretary of the board for CCB. She was the treasurer of the board for ACB. She has been a blind vendor and is currently running her own business for inspirational speaking and writing, I believe it is. Artis has also been involved in the Blind Students of California for many, many years, serving as the board liaison between BSC and the board. She is currently an advisor for the National Alliance of Blind Students on the national level. I believe Artis is a person who is very committed to this organization, and due to her past experiences and her commitment, I think she would be a great addition to the current board in our difficult times. Thank you.
Okay. May you. What do you have, about 3 minutes left? Okay. You have plenty of time left, like 4 minutes left.
Okay, this is this is Richard speaking on behalf of Artis Bazin. I wish to support Artis for the board position, as she is a big advocate for youth in the mentoring project, has brought forth a lot of initiatives to CCB, has been on the board, as Gabe has said, both nationally and locally on her chapter. She does an exceptional job in bringing a good spirit and recognition to the issues for blind youth, adults, and persons of even RSVA and other affiliates. I ask you to consider voting for Artis Bazin. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. All right, so the first speaker for Dan. I don't know who's going to be first, but David, okay? Whenever you're ready.
Thank you very much. Dan Kaiser, I am honored to speak on your behalf for becoming a board member. I have known Dan from the council, but did not start interacting with him until we were paired together as members for the legislative seminar in Washington. This was an eye-opener for me in terms of connecting with our representatives in Washington. With Dan's help, I was able to muster the courage and to meet with members of the representatives. Dan really needs no introduction. He has worked for the council for 10 years and provided the council with concise legislative reporting at conventions. SB 105 is extremely important to the blind and CCB. Without Dan's legislative work, along with others, this legislative would not exist. We would not have a division for the blind. I believe that Dan Kaiser will make a wonderful addition to the board. He knows the lay of the land, and with his candor and can-do attitude, which is extremely important for this somewhat formidable job, I ask you to join me and support Dan Kaiser for board member. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. All right, Kathy?
I've known and worked with Dan Kaiser for a number of years. I was president when he started with us and watched him develop through the years into a pretty good advocate for us. He did a fine job. He was with us for 10 years. He has the time and he has the interest. The job that he wanted to have didn't come through, and he is going to be looking for other employment. But for right now, at the same time, he wants to continue to support this organization. He certainly knows and has been around long enough to know all of our programs, and he's been involved in many of them. He's visited chapters. He's attended seminars. He worked very hard with doing SB 105. He was there all the time. He has appeared before countless other groups other than the legislature. He showed up at the back meetings quite often and gave him some interesting things to think about, as Dan can. I know him to be a hard worker. I know him to have a love of this organization and a belief in what we do, and he knows how to do what we want to do. And therefore, I hope you will all join me in voting for Dan Kaiser to go on the board of directors.
Okay, thank you. Okay, now we'll hear from Gina Hanlon. Excuse me.
I know David Hanlon as good as Donna knows Mitch. David is serving as the Randolph Shepherd Vendors of California's president. He serves on the board, the national board for the Randolph Shepherd Vendors of America. He also serves as CVP's on CVPC as a representative for the San Diego area. This is a very crucial time for the vending facilities out there. And I really feel very strongly that we here at CCB needs representation on the board by someone who is a vendor. I also would like, there is someone else that's going to speak in David's behalf, and I really don't know how well she knows him.
Okay, who's the second? Are you finished yet?
This is Jessie Lorenz, and I can assure you I don't know Dave nearly as well as our first speaker.
And we're glad to hear it, Jessie. We're really...
Or should I say yet? But it gives it gives me great honor to place before you Dave Hamlin is in nomination for a position on the board of directors. Persons serving on the board of directors of CCB need to have a good heart and understand the human services aspect of things. But you know what else they need? They need to understand business. And Mr. Hamlin has demonstrated by owning and running his own business that he understands how business works and how economic empowerment can help people like us. So a vote for Dave Hamlin is a vote to direct the board to think employment and think economic empowerment for people with disabilities.
All right, thank you. Okay, now we're going to hand out ballots. I don't know if they're going to hand them out right now. And do you want to have We're going to hand out the ballots. You're going to do your ballots in the way that we're telling you to do. We'll collect them, and once the ballots are collected, we'll do the delegate vote. Okay. If you are voting for Artis Basin, leave your ballot pure and pristine. If you are voting for excuse me, Dan Kaiser. The coughing doesn't mean anything, Dan, one way or the other. If you're voting for Dan Kaiser, tear off a corner. If you're voting for David Hanlon, tear off two corners. So, unruffled is Artis. One corner is Dan. Two corners is David. So, get your ballots done. Pass them back down in the direction you got them. They'll be collected. We don't have any ballots. You know, I want to say, while we're waiting here, I want to say that sometimes people have unfairly stated that I am too pro-California, not enough for the rest of the nation. I want to disprove that. Go Ducks, I say. And go Philadelphia. Yes, indeed. We'll go over that, too. Yeah, why not? Okay, we're going to begin the vote. ACB Capital Chapter 11 votes. Yeah.
ACB Capital Chapter votes. 4 for David Hanlon, 4 for Artis Basin, 3 for Dan Kaiser.
Okay, so it's 4 for Hanlon, 4 for Basin, 3 for Kaiser. Okay, Active Blind Inland Valley, 5 votes.
5 votes for Hanlon.
5 votes Hanlon. Alameda County Chapter, 5 votes. 5 votes Kaiser. Association of Multicultural Concerns, 5 votes.
5 votes for David Hanlon.
5 votes Hanlon. Bayview Chapter, 10 votes. Okay.
Bayview chapter casts 10 votes for Dan Kaiser.
10 votes Kaiser. Blind Students of California, 5 votes.
5 votes for Artist Bazin.
5 votes Bazin. Braille Revival League of California, 5 votes.
Braille Revival League casts 5 votes for Dan Kaiser.
5 votes Kaiser. Butte County Council, 5 votes. Two and a half Kaiser, 2.5 Hanlon. California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, 5 votes.
1 vote for Artis, 1 vote for Dan, and 3 votes for
Hanlon. 1 vote Bazin, 1 vote Kaiser, 3 votes, I'm sorry, yes, 3 votes Hanlon. So 1 vote Hanlon, 3 votes Hanlon, 1 vote Kaiser, 1 vote Bazin. Sorry. Library, Kahlua, Library Users of California, 5 votes.
Kahlua cast 4 Kaiser, 1 Bazin.
4 Kaiser, 1 Bazin. Central Coast Low Vision Council, 5 votes.
3 votes Bazin, 2 votes Kaiser.
3 votes Bazin, 2 votes Kaiser. Compton Chapter, 11 votes.
5.5 Bazin and 5.5 Hamlin.
5.5 Bazin, 5.5 Hamlin. East LA Chapter, 8 votes. 8 votes Hanlon. Glendale Burbank, 7 votes.
7 votes Bazin.
7 votes Bazin. Golden Gate Chapter, 5 votes.
5 votes Kaiser.
5 votes Kaiser. Greater Bakersfield, 5 votes.
Bazin.
5 votes Bazin. Greater Long Beach Chapter, 5 votes.
5 votes Bazin.
5 votes Bazin. Greater Los Angeles Chapter, 5 votes.
5 votes Bazin.
5 votes Bazin. Greater San Joaquin, 5 votes. You are the delegate, so that would you would still be able to vote if your delegate votes.
Okay. Okay, 5 votes Bazin.
5 votes Bazin. Guide Dog Users of California, 5 votes.
Guide Dog Users of California proudly cast 5 votes for our Secretary Dan Kaiser.
5 votes Kaiser. High Desert Chapter, 8 votes. I'm sorry? 7 Bazin, 1 Kaiser. Inland Empire Chapter, 7 votes.
1 vote Kaiser, 1 vote Bazin, 5 votes Hanlon.
1 Kaiser, 1 Bazin, 5 Hanlon. Orange County Chapter, 5 votes.
2 votes Bazin, 2 votes Kaiser, and 1 vote Hanlon.
2 votes Bazin, 2 votes Kaiser, 1 vote Hanlon. Orientation Center for the Blind Alumni, 5 votes.
5 votes Kaiser.
5 votes Kaiser. Randolph Shepherd Vendors of America, 5 votes. I'm sorry?
Let me think about this.
Well, we don't want to comment on that.
Five votes, David Hanlon.
Okay, five Hanlon. Redwood Empire Chapter, nine votes.
Nine votes, Dan Kaiser.
Nine votes, Kaiser. San Bernardino, nine votes.
Five Basin, four Hanlon.
San Diego Braille Club, six votes.
Six votes, Hanlon.
Six votes, Hanlon. San Diego Chapter, six votes.
Four votes, Dan Kaiser. Two, David Hanlon.
Four, Kaiser. Two, Hanlon. San Francisco Chapter, seven votes.
We were shouting for assistance. All right. The San Francisco Chapter will divide its votes as follows. Four for Dan Kaiser. Two for David Hanlon and one for Artis Basin.
Four Kaiser, two Hanlon, one Basin. San Gabriel, 10 votes. 10
votes, Artis Basin.
10 votes, Basin. San Mateo County, 10 votes.
10 for Kaiser.
10 Kaiser. Silicon Valley, 16 votes. Let me look at it again. I could have missed 78 members would be 16 votes. Well, let me see. Yeah. Yep, sure is. 16 votes. 16 Kaiser. Okay, Yosemite Gateway, six votes.
Three votes, Basin, three votes, Kaiser.
Three Basin, three Kaiser. Okay, we'll wait and calculate the votes. Okay, we're going to have a runoff. We have Kaiser with 148.5. We have Basin with 117.5. And we have David Hanlon with 95.5. So there will be a runoff. David, if you'd like to get to a mic, you certainly could. Oh, 95, actually, not 95.5. If he wants to.
Yeah, Jeff?
Yeah.
This is David Hanlon. Listen, I want to thank all of you that voted for me, and I hope you will consider me in the future because I am extremely concerned about our vending program, and I feel very fortunate in being here and knowing Jeff and Frank and Gabe. You know, they have been a tremendous support for the Randolph Shepherd Mended of California. So thank you all very much.
Thank you, David. Great job. Okay, so we now have a runoff between Artis and Dan. And if we'll keep it the same way as we had it last time so we don't confuse anybody. We're not going to have any additional We're not going to have any additional speakers, anything like that. So, do not touch your ballot for Basin and one corner for Kaiser. Raise your hand if you still have your ballot, unless you tore off two corners, in which case it's probably no good. Okay. Okay, we are ready. We're ready. Let's have some order. Want to get this thing done. Okay, ACB Capital Chapter, 11 votes. Six Basin, five Kaiser. Active Blind Inland Valley, five votes.
5 votes, Kaiser. Alameda County, 5 votes. 5 votes, Kaiser. Association Multicultural Concerns, 5 votes, Kaiser. I'll get down the next card. Bayview Chapter, 10 votes.
Bayview Chapter casts 10 votes for Dan Kaiser.
10 votes, Kaiser. Blind Students of California, 5 votes.
5 votes, Bazin.
5 votes, Bazin. Prayer Revival League of California, 5 votes.
Braille Revival League casts 5 votes for Dan Kaiser.
5 votes, Kaiser. Butte County Council, 5 votes.
5 votes, Kaiser.
5 votes, Kaiser. California Council of Citizens with Low Vision, 5 votes.
5 votes, Kaiser.
5 votes, Kaiser. Library Users, 5 votes.
4 Kaiser, 1 Bazin.
4 Kaiser, 1 Bazin. Central Coast. 5 votes.
5 votes, Bazin.
5 votes, Bazin. Compton Chapter, 11 votes. 5.5 for a piece, and the other 5.5 for a piece. 5.5 Kaiser, 5.5 Bazin. East LA, 8 votes. Mona, you.
Kaiser, 8 votes.
8 votes for Kaiser. Glendale Burbank, 7 votes.
7 Bazin.
7 Bazin. Golden Gate, 5 votes.
5 votes, Kaiser.
5 votes, Kaiser. Greater Bakersfield, 5 votes.
5 votes, Bazin.
5 votes, Bazin. Greater Long Beach, 5 votes.
I don't like the half. 2.5
feet. 2.5 Kaiser, 2.5 Bazin. Greater LA, 5 votes. Artist Bazin. Greater San Joaquin, 5 votes. I couldn't hear you. Five votes, Bazin. Guide Dog Users, 5 votes. 5 votes, Kaiser. Flipping these cards quick as I can here, guys. High Desert Chapter, 8 votes. 8 Bazin. Inland Empire, 7 votes.
7 votes, Bazin.
7 votes, Bazin. Sound like Bazed Kyre or something like that. I couldn't quite get that. But I believe it was Bazin. Orange County, 5 votes.
Orange County, 3 votes, Kaiser. 2 votes, Bazin.
3 Kaiser, 2 Bazin. Orientation Center, 5 votes.
5 votes, or OCB votes for Kaiser.
5 Kaiser. Randolph Shepherd, 5 votes.
The quote artist.
2.5 Kaiser, 2.5 Bazin. Redwood Empire, 9 votes.
9 votes, Kaiser.
9 votes, Kaiser. San Bernardino, 9 votes.
9 votes, Bazin.
9 votes, Bazin. San Diego Braille Club. 6 votes.
6 votes, Kaiser.
6 votes, Kaiser. San Diego Chapter, 6 votes. 6 votes, Kaiser. San Francisco, 7 votes.
7 votes, Kaiser.
7 votes, Kaiser. San Gabriel, 10 votes.
10 votes, Music Artisan, Artist Bazin Gregory.
10 votes. Gregory got some votes that time. Yeah. San Mateo, 10 votes.
10 votes for Kaiser.
10 votes, Kaiser. Silicon Valley, 16 votes. 16 Kaiser. Yosemite Gateway, 6 votes.
3 Bazin, 3 Kaiser.
3 Bazin, 3 Kaiser. And that wraps it up. So we will wait the tally. Okay. We have Kaiser, 220.5. Bazin, 140.5. Congratulations, Dan. Now, instead of taking orders from me, he can give them to me.
Finally, I'm Jeff's boss. No, I want to thank everybody for your confidence in me, and I will do my darndest to make this continue this organization as a great organization. And you know what? The secret is you couldn't have gone wrong with any of those candidates on the board. And the other funny thing is some of us were blind vendors, and Hanlon is a blind vendor. So vendors rule. Hey, okay.
Thank you for everyone who supported me, and go CZB.
Thank you. It was 220.5 and 140.5. Okay, we have one slot left. The nominee is Linda Perel. Are there any further nominations? Are there any further nominations?
We're out
here. What? Well, probably. Are there any further nominations? There's a motion to nomination to close, but elected by acclamation. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Linda! Linda!
Thank you, everyone. As all of you watched me support one lost cause after another last night, I thought, will I be standing here tonight? But I want you to know that I will continue to use my social work skills to help build consensus in this organization, and I am thrilled to have the opportunity to serve. Thank you all.
Thank you, Linda. Okay, we are adjourned until tomorrow afternoon. Be prepared, because we are going to have a very important session tomorrow afternoon. Thank you.